meeting, regular meeting of Lackawanna County Board of Supervisors to order. First, we will begin with the Pledge of Allegiance and the Senate.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We're done.
We are?
It was a good plan. Couldn't help but think about that statue.
Maybe you are, but I'm not.
Okay, we need to go into a closed meeting.
So adopt the agenda first.
Oh, we're going to adopt the agenda first, okay. So now we'll adopt the agenda. Any recommendations or other?
Not only adopt the agenda, but...
Second.
Motion has been made by Mrs. Booker and seconded by Mr. Weaver to adopt the agenda. Chair votes aye.
We all vote aye.
We all vote aye. We all vote aye. Okay, great. And now we will go into a closed session. So, I don't know.
This is by the chair. I'm moving the Lackawanna County Board of Supervisors entering to a closed meeting pursuant to the provisions of Section 2.2-3711-4-6.1. It's not investment of funds. That's what it's... Okay, can say?
Yes.
Okay, all right. Investment of funds.
Just give it to me.
Okay, and then is there another one? Yeah. Okay. All right, thank you. Oh, this is good training for me. All right. Into a closed session, purpose of discussion. Is that right?
Maybe, a second.
Second.
A question. Don't we list, say those, just the ones that's checkmarked?
That's the only one that's checkmarked, yeah.
Oh, okay, okay. Usually we have a line, yeah. Sorry to interfere with you.
No, at all. Okay, great. So, you have a second?
Second.
Okay, we have a motion going to closed session. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Then with the closed meeting, the adjournment to Lackawanna County Board of Supervisors planning to begin the session. It is all board supervisors, that's the best of the members relevant. One only part of this matter is luckily done. Open meeting requirements from Section 2.2-3711 of the Code of Virginia 1950, as amended to only such public business matters as were identified in the motion, by which the closed meeting was convened were heard, discussed, or considered.
Motion's been made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Booker. Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
Ms. Booker?
Aye. Aye.
Chair votes aye. We are now out of closed session. Now we will go ahead with the county administrator's report.
Mr. Chair, members of the board, I'll try and be brief here for some of these items. So for one, happy belated birthday to Mr. Sheridan and a happy early birthday to Ms. Booker coming up here. Everyone turned 25 this year.
Just at 30.
Inside 30, okay. So the Lackawanna election results are final, and luckily most of a lot of the positions were unopposed, but again, we'll have Mrs. Booker and Mrs. Eager again for the Palmyra and Fork Union districts, constitutional officers, Jeff Hayslip, Sheriff Hess, Mel Sheridan, Linda Lenhair's treasurer, and then school board. The only change is Perry Johnson, still the Fork Union district, and then James Kelly is now the new Palmyra district representative. A couple staff recognitions or a couple staff announcements. We got some new employees that started. So we finally hired the Public Works, the HVAC specialist for Public Works. He started Friday, November 1st. And then we also hired the new part-time position, the Human Resources Assistant, Michelle Hogan. She started Monday, November 4th. Both of them come to the county with great experience in both of their positions and fields, so we're lucky to have them. So a little announcement. Columbia Cleanup Day was a good success. So Saturday, November 2nd, from 9 a.m. to 12:30, we had a nice little cleanup day down in Columbia. Special thanks to the participants that were there. We had some residents from Fluvanna, residents from Cumberland County, and residents from Goochland, kind of bordering the town of Columbia. The CARE Task Force members that were there. Mr. Sheridan was there putting in a lot of sweat. And then I also want to thank staff members Aaron Spitzer and Douglas Miles that came out. So we got a whole construction container, a big, huge construction container that we filled up with furniture, TVs, rusted, burn barrels, food, landscaping debris on the county property. And then there's some other properties right around there in the VDOT right-of-way. There was some large items that we just threw in the dumpster there, too. We collected 53 tires, and we also filled 50 orange VDOT bags that are, I think they're sitting down there still. So we'll have to get with Mr. Saunders. I know he's around here somewhere to make sure we get those orange bags cleaned up. But it was a great event. There's still a lot more to clean up down there on some of the back roads down there. So that'll be something to talk to.
Still a lot to be done, but a lot there got is, done. Mr. Dahl is very humble because he and Mr. Miles and Mr. Spitzer were doing all the heavy lifting of the couches and everything else.
Dragging recliners out of the woods and old tires.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I went in there Sunday to check and make sure y'all did a good job.
I wish I would have had a before picture of Andrew Street, night and day, on the east side.
The citizens had made us aware of the CARE Task Force about a big, basically the end of one of the streets down there that had become a dump. And that's where...
There's still 90%
of the stuff came from that area, but they went up there with about 17, 18 people. Yeah.
And there's one dad out there from Cumberland. He had six of his kids out there picking up bottles.
Seven was on his back.
Okay, that's right. He had his kids out there picking up just little things, putting them in the orange VDOT bag. So it was a great event for everyone to be out there and clean that up, clean up the county properties too. Let's hear Halloween with Parks and Rec. So October 25th, the event at the library, they had about 80 participants at the, for the magic show and just a few less for the movie. Brian Bentz was the magician and Toy Story 4 was the movie. Also October 26th, out at the Pole Barn for Pleasant Grove, they had crafts, games, pinatas, costume and carving contest. There were about 250 to 350 participants there. A big thanks also to the FUMA Interact Club. They were great out there, and I was out there for the pinatas, and we've got some future baseball players out there with the bats, and boys and girls, they were just swinging away at those pinatas. And then also we had October 31st, we had the Trunk or Treat event, which was sponsored by the Clerk of the Courts. Normally it was held out at the parking lot out here across from the courthouse, but just due to the weather, Palmyra Fire Station opened up the fire station there, and they held the event there at the Palmyra Fire Station. Again, they gave out candy to over 100 children, so another great event for Parks and Rec. Just a little update. So Pleasant Grove Park now has what is a new ambient weather station located out Pleasant Grove Park. The station gives real-time information, temperature, precipitation, wind speed, and humidity out there. So if you want to access it, you can go to weatherunderground.com, and if you put in park code right here, this will pull up the weather out at Pleasant Grove Park. And just a couple items of direction from the board. Like I said, this is not formal items, but just some direction on how the board wants me to move forward. So I sent the board an email, which is there's a letter there from the Lake Monticello Board of Directors about the Monish Gate. They listed a lot of issues that they see with VDOT limiting the Monish Gate and the left turn lane in and left turn lane out once the roundabout's in. The letter lists a lot of issues and the seven issues that they relate are up here. The general manager for the Lake Monticello Owners Association reached out to me and wanted to to discuss how we move forward and maybe getting a meeting set up with VDOT. Does the board want me to move forward with trying to see if we can come up for an alternate solution from the county and the lake standpoint, or how do you want me to move forward with that? And like I said, and VDOT's going to be here this evening too, so if we have any further questions when they come out, we can ask VDOT some questions too. I see Alan and Bethel sitting back there, so. But if the board wants me to engage with the general manager for Lake Monticello, I certainly can.
I think we could make that decision after we talk to Mr. Saunders.
We'll do that. We'll wait until then. And then one other thing, the Flavina Historical Society. So if you remember for the Farm Heritage Museum, they kind of entered into a verbal payment agreement that the county was going to do certain things for the Farm Heritage Museum, and then they were going to pay us back. If you remember, they came back to the county back in June because there was a little over $10,000 that they were going to pay to the county. The board at that point back in June and formally in July forgave the Historical Society for paying that money back. In the email, Mr. Moss stated that they agreed to pay the county $5,000 a year for 3 years for a total of $15,000. That's actually, there's a correction to that. It should be $5,000 a year for 5 years for $25,000. But after the board forgave the $10,000, the Historical Society paid the county $5,000, which would mean there is four additional payments of $5,000 for a total of $20,000 to pay. They are requesting that the county forgo collecting those remaining payments so they can continue the good work that they're doing for the county with everything they do in fundraising. So I can either bring this back to the board in something more formal, or what does the board, how does the board want me to move forward with this?
If people agree to do something, they ought to do it. Period.
So they did the
cemetery fencing out of Pleasant Grove Park, the new iron.
And what did that cost?
That
Aaron, I don't know, 15,000 maybe.
We
should allow it. I think it's more formally.
Do you want to have them come out? Yeah. And I can.
I don't think
they've done some
things. I don't think it's a decision we can make without their.
No, and this is not, do you want to forgive it? This is, how do you want me to move forward? Do you want me to just say, hey, you come on out and present to the board? And
I believe that the families whose graves are there paid for some of those.
I think there was a lot of fundraising from them.
Yes.
And I, like I said, but in the email, they talked about the fundraising that they did for the Pleasant Grove House, the Farm Heritage Museum.
Well, they're always doing something in it. It's a great organization, but when somebody says they're going to do something, then why do you have to argue over it all the time? They said they were going to do it, and they ought to do it. Period.
So I think the direction from the board is have the Historical Society come here and do a formal presentation and request.
You okay with that?
Whatever.
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
Okay. We'll do that. And just some... upcoming board meetings, we've got, so the next meeting, November 20th, we have at 5:30, there's the IAC dinner for the board, which is going to be in the Morris Room, and then we have, after that, we just have a regular 7 p.m. meeting. Actually, December 4th and December 18th, we have our regular meetings at 4 p.m. and at 7 p.m., but there are also some work sessions that we had a few glitches today with some slides, so that didn't get updated, but we'll have it updated for the next one, but... If I remember correctly, we have a 4 p.m. regular meeting, then a 7 p.m. work session, Caitlin, on December 4th.
Work session on 7 p.m.
On December 18th. But we'll get that to you for the next one. But anyway, for November 20th, 5:30, you have an IAC dinner and then a 7 p.m. regular meeting. And that is all that I have for you.
I'd like to ask, Mr. Chair, this is Peter, and I did present first time for the Gold Award for the Girl Scouts to the young lady. On the 22nd of October, and we had the family sent there. It was very delightful. We saw the ceremony where the different ones moved up to the next level. And, you know, and watching the family, the little kids running around, it was really, really nice. And I have noticed since then that on the television, they're advertising the Gold Award for Girl Scouts. That's the first time I've ever seen it really, you know, advertised or come out in front. Mm-hmm. So that was quite an honor for us.
Yes.
We had a good time. We had points. She read this. I read that. We worked together.
Oh, I'm glad y'all were able to go ahead and do that.
Thank you.
And I will add one other thing. The 18th of December, you'll be in charge. I'll be out of town. That week. Next, I will now open the first round of public comment. Anyone wishing to address the board, please step to the witness chair. State your name and address. Keep your comments to 5 minutes on topic and directed to the board. Is anyone wishing to speak at this time?
Good evening.
Good evening.
Congratulations to those re-elected. My name is Linda Stager. I live at 2949 Ridge Road in Palmyra. I came in tonight to give you a brief report of something that I am planning. I'm not going to be asking for anything from you. I am the president of the Fluvanna Leadership Alumni Group, and I was encouraged recently by One Shared Story, which is a nonprofit that is working with our historical society on mapping of historic sites in the county. I was encouraged by them to apply for a grant from the Virginia Tourism Corporation. The deadline is very soon, and so I'm not certain that I'll be able to put together a competitive package, but I do plan to work very hard on that. The grant requires three partners. One partner will be One Shared Story. I'll tell you about them. The other partner is our Economic Development Authority, and the third partner is the Fluvanna Leadership Alumni Group, which will hold the grant if it's funded. We have a budget, a proposed budget of $4,800 that would be spent primarily for education of interns to learn the software to be able to carry forward this effort of interactive mapping of the county. A good portion of the budget is also for access to the software. We don't have to buy a software license, which is about $5,000 and doesn't include anybody to help us run it. We are partnering with One Shared Story, which holds the license and will be training interns and a couple citizens in the county to be able to manipulate the software and develop a site. So the idea is that we would eventually end up with an interactive map of the county. This has been done in Louisa County recently. If you want, I can come back at another day and give a more formal presentation, which includes showing you these links, or you can look at them yourself. The town of Louisa has interactive mapping, and they also have a trail, which is called the Give Me Liberty Trail. Because Patrick Henry was a representative of Louisa County at the time he said that. So if we are successful in funding, getting funding, a group of citizens from the alumni group in conjunction with One Shared Story would be developing an interactive map of the county. This would include any kind of sites that we wanted. It could be sorted by your interest. If you had family members who were interested in animals, you could sort by animal sites, SPCAs or other things like that. Recreation sites, we could use it to develop an artisan trail. We could use it to develop a farm trail. We could use it to supplement the Park Commission's printed map of the town of Palmyra. So those are the various ways that the software could be eventually used. And my hope is that in the end, if it proves that this use of software could increase tourism to the county, which would increase sales tax revenue, that it might be worthy of incorporating into the county's GIS capabilities. But that would be down the line. Do you have any questions? I just wanted to let you know I was doing it. The deadline for the draft is this month, and the final is in December.
How much is the grant?
The grant is a maximum of $10,000. It's a one-to-one match. So our budget is $4,800. That means that locally we have to raise $2,400. So with the three partners that are currently on board, that's 750. We still have about 1,600 to go. I plan to solicit that from local businesses. They'll be able to make tax-deductible contributions because One Shared Story is already a nonprofit. We'll also be applying for nonprofit status for the Fluvanna Leadership Alumni Group.
I think it would be helpful if we could give Linda Steiger a letter of support for that. Would that be possible? We could take that up under new business? Okay.
That's a good idea.
I think that would make the grant more of a contender if they perceived that the county was behind it. That would be great. I'm sorry I won't be able to stay for your new business portion. Do you have any other questions about it?
Okay.
Well,
we appreciate that.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else? No one else on that list or non-public comments? There are no public hearings. We will go to action matters. TJPDC 2019 legislative program. Mr. Blunt.
Mr. Chairman. Evening or afternoon? It's getting dark so early now. It seems like evening. My congratulations as well to the two election winners and for the birthday people. Thank you also for giving me the opportunity to be on the agenda this evening to talk to you for a few more minutes about legislative issues that we talked about back in September. You do have before you the draft regional legislative program for approval. And I've also included in your packet a one-page summary of some of the most significant changes from the current version. Hopefully that was helpful as you were looking through that. If I could just spend a couple of minutes talking about some of those changes. First, in the top three priorities, I would note some changes to the broadband position. We've updated some of the funding numbers, also added some language in to support, indicating support for local broadband authorities and support for easier access to railroad easements for installing broadband infrastructure. Great to see in Fluvanna County that you all have such a great plan in place with your partnership with CVAC to bring broadband to Fluvanna. In the other two positions, really only some technical changes to the budget and public education funding positions. I would note that the K-12 position continues to emphasize that underfunding by the state of public ed and urging them not to make any policy changes that are going to lessen their support for public education. We talked about that at the September meeting, I believe, Mr. Chairman. The other priorities, local revenue authority, have added in a new position opposing changes to the current tax assessment appeals process. It's a issue that we've seen some legislation on the past couple of years. Got a little bit more attention here during the off season this past year in the form of a study. I'm not anticipating that there will be any harmful legislation moving forward, but did want it to be in position on that issue as well. And then finally, under land use and growth management, there's some revised language related to proffers. We had the legislation in 2019 that made some changes to the proffer law, so we wanted to recognize those changes as well. Second part of the program has some ongoing legislative position statements, and I just wanted to mention a couple there. Under the environmental quality position, there are some new statements added to the position related to solar. One of those is which to support easing the property tax exemption for utility-scale solar. Also have a new statement that's been added to an existing position on recycling to support improvements in the form of state incentives for recycling markets and also for providing accurate reporting of recycling data to the state. Under general government, I've added a new statement to the position on elections to support state funding for the new early voting requirements that will take effect a year from now with the 2020 November elections. And then also to address, this was a request from your neighbors to the north in Louisa, to address GIS use in determining county boundaries. And we've added that to the existing position on voting district boundaries that we had from this past year. And then finally, under public safety, a couple of new positions related to funding. One, to request full state funding for currently authorized positions for Commonwealth's attorney's offices. This has really come into play with the discussion of the increased use of body-worn cameras by law enforcement officers. There's a position to support fair transitioning to next-gen 911, and also to support state funding for alternative options for transporting mental health patients. Those are the highlights. Glad to take any suggestions you may have for any further revisions, comments that you may have. And again, I'm looking for your approval this evening.
One question I have is, I guess on some of these, and we've gone through these priorities in the past, mm-hmm. years, and they've stalled, for lack of a better word. Is there some anticipation that some of these priorities will move forward given the election results?
Yeah, you know, had a number of conversations, I guess, today, you know, given the results of last night. I think you probably will see some of these things beginning to get addressed. I don't know that we're going to see things totally addressed in the first year, the first, you know, or the second year. I think my caution would be for, you know, not going too fast, too far too fast. Certainly, I think, you know, some of the issues, particularly related to funding K-12 education, will probably be one of the foremost ones, teacher salaries. I think some of the things that will probably be addressed first, though, are, you know, the likes of, you know, maybe some women's issues, passage of the ERA. I think certainly for those folks in the more suburban areas that are really interested in seeing some additional weapons or gun legislation, more authority for the prohibition of certain weapons. I think we'll see that. I think we'll see some wage issues. I think we'll see some clean energy issues being addressed. Kind of just what I see on the radar. But yeah, I think we might be positioned to, you know, for those years that I've come and said, you know, it's going to take a, you know, change in the makeup of the General Assembly to make some of this happen. I think that at some point that will be part of the plan.
One section about fire rescue, mm-hmm. one sentence.
Oh, you know, I may have failed to mention there was actually a new statement on, has having to do with volunteers, yeah, and having volunteers, some additional tools, yeah, to support your emergency services providers. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, that's.
Yeah, I wanted to keep that a little broad. That's actually trying to encompass a specific request that came from one of the other localities that's trying to support, to provide. I mean, they already have in place a number of incentives, but I think there's some things that they're kind of some. I'm sorry?
$33 a year.
Is that what your incentive is? Okay. Yeah. This is what they're trying to do is to be able to maybe provide some in-kind resources or in-kind donations, kind of back office, you know, helping with some of their you know, administrative, contractual, and other type of tasks. So there was an attorney general's opinion a number of years ago that kind of put some limitations on what in-kind donations is defined as, and right now it's particularly related to events, and they're looking to, you know, be able to provide those volunteer organizations with some additional in-kind support. But
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'll take a look at that and see if maybe there was some way that, you know, that I can do that to, and still, you know, get at what the other request was. Thank you for bringing that up.
Any other questions? And as usual, thank you for all your support that you give us and all the information.
My pleasure.
That way. Appreciate it.
Yep, thank you.
Chair, I move to adopt the draft Thomas Jefferson Planning District Commission legislative program.
Second.
There's Ms. Booker's vote right there. Thank you, Ms. Booker.
So, motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Eager. All in favor?
Not a problem.
All in favor? Not a problem.
All right. I'll take
thank
that.
You
thank you all.
Motion passed 5-0.
Your next
I'm sorry. Next up is going to be the contract for security system, Ms. Cindy Tolbert.
Good evening.
Good evening, ma'am.
So this has to do with the video system upgrades in this building. The courthouse is in need of an upgrade of the surveillance system in order to remain functional for its security purposes. The current system just isn't up to par. It has mostly analog cameras and does not maintain recording when there's a power outage. It also has pretty poor quality when it is functioning. The sheriff's office received a new security system in 2017. This system, adding these components to the system, will allow the two systems to talk to each other. So at the sheriff's office, they will be able to see what's going on in this building and vice versa. So we, you know, added security there. ECNM Integrated Solutions did the install and build at the sheriff's office. They'll also be doing it here in order to integrate the two systems. Total cost for the system, including the equipment and all the labor and everything they plan on doing, is $53,500. There was a CIP approved for FY20 for $75,640. This included the security system and the ability to start doing the fingerprinting here in this building instead of having to transport people back and forth when fingerprinting needed to be done.
Cindy, one thing. Mm-hmm. The remaining 20-some thousand that's left, that's going to be
used for the fingerprint system, which has already been ordered, may have been delivered already. I'm not 100% about that, but it will fall well within the original CIP funding. So there shouldn't be any additionals unless something major happens in the install in this building, and I don't expect that to happen. Any questions?
Okay, thank you very much.
We got Captain Wells here that might be able to speak on it too if you have any questions.
He's done a very good job. I mean, does anybody have questions, Captain Wells? I love listening to that gentleman talk, but he's I'll give you a shout. Do we have a motion?
I move the Board of Supervisors approve the contract between the county for that and ECM Integrated Solutions for the new system of grants going for $53,000 and further authorize the county administrator to execute the subject to approval.
Okay. Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Opposed? And the chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. Thank you very much. The only thing I'll say about this is I wonder down the road, you know, this probably costs too much, is putting one in each secretary's office, looking at the front door of each school, just to have a camera going to the sheriff's office. That was the only thought that came to my mind when we were talking about this, just to have it right there, because then we don't have to wait until the blend gets pushed if we happen to see something going on.
Sure, is it feasible with technology? It's just whatever the cost.
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. All right, we'll let you fund it. Let you fund it, maybe.
I'll write the check. See, closed landfill environmental monitoring program, Ms. Tolbert.
And this is the same environmental program we do every year that we're required to do at the landfill. It doesn't change every year. It's the same groundwater sampling, gas monitoring, post-closure inspections. The total for this fiscal year is going to be $25,900. That is a bit of an increase over last year. Keep in mind, last year, most of the year was under a different contract. We redid our contract with Draper Aiden, so prices changed because those prices were the same for 5 years before that, so they'll be the same for five
How
years
much
now.
Did it increase by?
There's two different pieces of it that increased. One is the actual testing, which Draper Aiden has no control over. It's what the laboratories charge them.
Right?
There's two different items that have to be.
It does that.
Draper Aiden's our consultant.
Right. In the past, we have left it up to Draper Aiden to choose that laboratory themselves because they keep laboratories under contract. Because there was such an increase in those laboratory costs this year, ends up being about 19% of the cost increase is, or not of the cost increase, but there was a 19% increase in those costs. We did require them this year to basically get bids. So they're going to have to get more than one bid from laboratories and use the lowest cost bid. So these costs may not be final. They may be able to get a laboratory to go lower. But we did put that in and require that this year. Draper Aiden's cost increase was about 4% from the last contract to this one. So that is the price increase for it.
So what's the dollar amount then?
Last year it totaled about $22,734 is what we spent, and this year it'll be $25,900.
$25,900 is the maximum.
Is the maximum.
Not to exceed.
Them. Right,
and,
not
and
to
if,
exceed
if
that.
If they get more lab prices, it
then it
less.
Could go lower, yes.
Any other questions?
Where does this money come from, the $25,900?
It is budgeted in Public Works in their budgets.
It falls under the convenience center since we close landfill. We budget for it every single year. So,
any other questions? Do I have a motion?
Okay. At the same time,
she doesn't have to move very far.
Right.
That's okay. I got it.
Closed landfill not to exceed $25,900 and further authorize the county administrator to execute the agreements subject to approval as the former county attorney.
Okay. Got a motion made by Ms. Booker and seconded by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passed 5-0. We will now go with D. FY20 SCBA funding request, Mr. Quisdale.
Good evening. Sorry, I'm going to be a little hoarse tonight. We have a lot of expensive things on the agenda tonight, so I thought I'd give you just a little bit update on our fund balance. Right now, our current unaudited unassigned fund balance is $2,460,969. Right now, it looks like the schools will have about $900,000 coming back to us, if that's what the board elects to do. And estimate, the county should have probably between revenues and expenses about $2.5 million, give or take. We did have the auditors here last week, so we will have figures that are firmed up by the beginning of December. But I'm just wanting to give you kind of an idea of where we're at.
So you said $2.5 million in the undesignated fund balance?
It's $2.5 million.
Right now.
And our expenditures came in about, our revenue came in about $1.5 million higher than we had budgeted. And our expenditures are roughly around about $1 million less. So we saved some money somewhere. So that's good.
And Mr. Twisdale looked at that today. Some of it's property taxes, the second half increase. Some of it's due to personal property taxes, there was an increase, which primarily I think a lot of it had to do with DMV stops, and then there was interest and penalties that were also increased. Some sales tax was higher, so.
Potentially. Now, just a reminder, I think we did budget revenues for FY20 a little bit more aggressively than we did in 19, so just something to keep in the back of your mind. We may not necessarily have that same windfall then. I think, finance directors are notoriously frugal. So I think at this point, we really need to take a hard look at wants versus needs. You know, there are a lot of wants and needs in the county. There are a lot of things we really have to have to function, and there's a lot of things that would be nice. So, you know, I just ask everybody to keep that in mind when we start looking at some of the things that are coming out of unassigned fund balance.
And just remember, the 2.4 right now, basically, that amount that's there, that money is really earmarked for Zion's Crossroads at this point. So
actually, $3 million technically earmarked for Zion Crossroads.
So we have none.
So technically, right at this point, no, we have none, but we're going to end up with the audit. And so from once the audit's over,
we'll have some.
There is going to be some money that goes back into fund balance just because we ended up better from revenues. Revenues and
kind of like budget. Going to the dryer and finding a $10 bill.
A little bit.
Don't we all miss out? Some of them we can't afford.
So with that, we'll start with the FY20 SCBA funding request. As the board is aware, we had applied for a grant twice for the last 2 years, the Assistance to Firefighters grant for the self-contained breathing apparatus, and unfortunately we did not receive the grant either time. They don't really give you a lot of information on why you don't receive the grant. There are just thousands and thousands and thousands of people that apply, and sometimes you get them and sometimes you don't. So unfortunately, our current SCBAs are expired or at end of life. And the board did cash fund $100,000 in FY19 and $100,000 in FY20, the CIP. So we do have $200,000 sitting there. However, the cost of the equipment based on the grant submitted is approximately $818,000. And I have the breakdown there for you to see. Now, this is not necessarily probably the Cadillac of SCBAs, but it's also not the bottom of the barrel either. This is, you know, basically an average of costs that were looked at. So basically, we are looking for $618,000 in fund balance, unassigned fund balance, to cover this. Anybody have any questions? And we do have some IRSB folks here, I think, tonight.
Well, I'm just going to point out here, we have basically, as you say, $2,462,000 in fund balance. Once you take that $618,000 away from that, that's going to leave you $1,844,000. Then we go to the next agenda item, and there's $83,000 for that one. So that $1,844,000 is going to again be reduced. It's going to be going down to $1,761,000. So,
and then the next one.
Yeah, I mean,
this is the wants and needs time.
I don't know.
Now, the SCBAs really are in need. This is safety equipment that allows firefighters to go into buildings and fight fires, and what we have is expired.
So we have to have it, right?
We have to have it. Mm-hmm. So unless we come up with some other way to pay for it.
Like I said, for the last two fiscal years, we budgeted some money. We applied for grants. We were hoping to get the grants. And, you know, we learned some lessons the first time. We went back and applied the second time. And just unfortunately, the grant denial letter that we get is so vague. It tells you absolutely nothing for why the county did not get the grant. There is $315 million that FEMA awarded to grantees throughout the U.S., but unfortunately, Fluvanna County was not one of them. So we are on the hook for the $618,000.
So it wasn't just the county, it's the federal government.
Oh, yes, correct.
The state.
Some of the units have malfunctioned, and if they malfunction with us at the wrong place, at the wrong time, you could have a catastrophic.
How long did that last?
20 years.
Chief Brent?
15 years.
They have a 15-year expiration date. And, all of ours are either have expired or in the process of expiring.
By then.
And how many do we have?
80, I think.
How many was it? 96.
Yeah, 96, yeah. Each engine has five. You got 8 engines. Each tank has 2. You got to have spare bottles to go with it. So every unit you have has to have a spare. And the cascade systems, these are the units that we have in the station, so when the firefighters get back to the station, they can fill the bottles back up. And we have also, we have a mobile unit on the Cumberland One's squad truck, so we take the air with us to a farm.
Just to give an example, the fire we had the other week, you got a line of bottles sitting there that were empty, and you had a line of bottles that were sitting there dead air. And then they were walking back and forth to the squad den trying to refill them as fast as they could refill.
Yeah, we refill on site, and then we bring squad 10 back to the station and fill it back up off of the cascade system that's in the station.
Yeah. Well, and one of the cascade systems is Belmire's. We have to, one of them has to be replaced because they won't fit.
No.
Okay. I was thinking I heard that somewhere.
No, they all. They all are functioning right now. Yes. And the system we have now, you have to be able to fill. Well, I know the one at Palm Island fills a 36,000 psi bottle, and the new ones are 4,500 psi's. So you got to have a cascade system that can handle that capacity.
What do you mean by 36?
The pressure, air pressure in the bottle.
In the bottle, which is?
Which is the bottle that's on your back.
Okay.
How long does that last in a fire?
How long does it last?
Yes.
15 to 20 minutes.
Okay.
The bottles, the 45 bottle will last, depending on the person, around 30 minutes. And in the firefighting business, you're ready to come up with that anyway. When you use that 30 minutes, you should be coming up rehabbing and all the people going in to take care of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think you have any choice.
Nope. We don't have a choice. If we don't have them, we can't go inside the house structure. We're just going to stand on the outside and wait. Mm-hmm. Double it on from there.
Okay. We've had several in the county in the last year that we've gone in and saved houses property.
Okay, I move that the Board of Supervisors approve a supplemental appropriation of $618,000 from undesignated fund balance to the CIP project budget for the fire and rescue SCBA equipment to change funding from grant funded to cash funded.
Motion made by Ms. Eager, seconded by Ms. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. Now go to D, FY-20, rescue truck funding.
This is for the replacement of support 56 for Lake Monticello Water Rescue. It was approved in the FY-20 CIP as debt funding in the amount of $95,000. We have gotten a quote on a 2020 truck outfitted with the equipment that would be necessary for this. The truck came in at $81,596.04. We are adding a contingency of $1,400 just because when you get a quote and then you wait months, when you go back, usually something has changed a little bit. It's gone up a little bit in price and that kind of thing. So that's where we're at with this. This current vehicle is 28 years old and is approaching 100,000 miles. This was in the CIP to be debt funded along with two other engines. If this truck is debt funded, then it's going to have to be titled and insured as a county vehicle. Right now, all of Lake Monticello's equipment is in their corporation's name, and it's also in their corporation's, under their corporation's insurance. Also, based on the condition of the truck, there are some issues with it mechanically. If we wait until we do funding for the other two engines, this truck's probably not going to be operable at that point. And so we are requesting that this be funded out of unassigned fund balance at $83,000. And the link is here to speak about this if you would like to talk to them.
Have we had an estimate on repairing the truck, the engine part that...
John Lyon?
No, not at this time.
John, will you come up here, please?
John Lyon, Lake Water Rescue. No, I have not gotten an estimate on that at this point yet. It has a transmission leak and rear differential leak, and it needs a fuel injection sensor. And I have not yet gotten a quote on those yet.
I'd kind of like to know what it would take to put it back in service, before we commit to
this. Already approved the replacement at $95,000. We're coming in $12,000 under that, under the price you have already approved.
It was approved. The board approved it for debt funding, but Lake Monticello doesn't want the debt funded because they want it in their name. So therefore, the county would have the cash.
I don't think we have the cash. I mean, if we'll have a remaining after this expense, $1,761,969, and that's we've got that. Does then that also have to $300,000?
The $3 million.
$3 million, yes. Has to come from here.
Whatever we're paying cash for Zion's Crossroads comes from
that. From the. So we just don't have the money.
So by December. Once the audit and all the financials are done, we will know what our new unassigned fund balance number is once we uncommit CIP projects, once all of our revenues come back in, and once all the audit is completed. We will have a more current update at that point, so we'll know what the final figures are so the board can start moving forward with, you know, saying, you know, this is the number we have to work with at this point moving forward.
Okay, well then I'd like to defer this until we know what we've got left.
What is the urgency of this now?
Well, if we don't replace it now, I'm going to have to put money in to repair it to keep it running. It's one of our frontline trucks,
mm-hmm.
So I will have to get those repairs made. I have not gotten a price on what that will be yet, but. I'll have to throw money at a vehicle that I'm going to
get rid of
in 6 months. So that's the reason for moving it forward at this point. So I'd rather not throw money at something I'm going to get rid of.
Could you find out what it would take to fix it?
Sure.
I'd appreciate that.
Okay.
Ms. Porter, I'll see you. Thank you. Oh, I got you as soon as you put it in the My bad.
Yeah. And how old did you say it was now?
It's 28 years old. It's a
28 years old.
It's a 1991 Suburban.
And it has.
You get a little age on it then.
We've gotten our money's worth out of it.
Uh-huh.
But it only has 100,000 miles.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's not too many miles on a truck like that, is it?
I think our worth it. This would be our purchase. We're going to pay cash for the truck.
So what is up? What is the hold up on the debt funding? I get the title and all that, but really.
Well, the other two trucks are not spec'd out yet,
okay.
So they're still working on the other two trucks.
Right.
And that will take 6 months.
I'm not sure.
Well, it also depends on how you want to fund it. If you're trying to get into a pool, like a spring pool, or if you're, it would depend on what type of funding we were going to do.
You certainly don't want to necessarily. I mean.
We don't want
for $90,000, I mean, we could go out and do one single loan for that, or we typically don't do that. You know, we'll go out for a larger batch.
You got enough debt, you don't need any more debt, that's for sure.
And I mean, what is our debt? It's $100 million?
No, it's not $100 million. It's probably...
96.
What's that? 96? No, it's, uh-huh. It's... Well, after this year, it'll probably be less than 96, but it's probably in the 90s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I said, we pay off about usually $5 to $6 million of principal a year.
How many vehicles does Motor Rescue have?
Three. So we have.
Have two existing.
We have two existing, plus this one. So DIFI, Water Rescue 58, and Support 56.
Is there any other item that can be added into that debt request that we didn't include at the beginning of, I guess?
What do you mean? Are you saying
if we funded this, but was there something else that we weren't planning on funding out of debt, if you would?
I would have to go back and look what's in the CIP. I mean, at this point, if let's just say the board says we don't want to fund this through debt, well, then we'll just... We would maybe go out for a lesser debt issuance for the two other vehicles, but I mean, was that your question? Or
I think he wants to know if there's anything else we could
borrow with this
loan to make it. In other words, is there something else we were going to borrow that we could stick in with this loan to make it a bigger funding? Right. That's
well. In other words, if we paid this now, you know, but we were going to use money, you know.
If you're going to take out debt for something else, you know, in the CIP. Honestly,
I'd rather pay for it now.
The other two trucks.
Well, I mean, I know there's other trucks in this year's CIP, and I don't remember what they are. What's that?
But this is almost.
And one of them is a $600,000. And again, if we wait and put it in with the debt funding, then we're in the situation where we're going to have to work with someone. How we're going to finance this? I mean, whose name is going in?
Yeah, I mean, you just get into an issue. I mean, with the county taking out the debt, and it's a Lake Monticello truck, it has to be in our name, and so. You know, we kind of get into this spiral. Are we going to start doing random stuff for random trucks? To me, it's either you do all vehicles are in county's name, or Lake Monticello keeps them in their name instead of all these oddball onesie twosies.
Is there any friction among this? I mean, I don't see that we're all in it together. So, you know. I want just as much protection for Lake as the rest of the county. That's my feeling, certainly, and I think it's the rest of the board. So, the separation kind of bothers me.
You would have to ask the Lake board.
Yeah, I don't think that there's an issue. But the one thing, and maybe Mr. Payne can address this, is titled in the county name and housed with us. We might have to have an MOU or something like that. I don't know.
Well, we probably would do that. I don't think that is a big deal.
Yeah, so I don't think that's a...
Wouldn't be a big deal to do that.
No, the insurance issues would concern me more. I don't know whether that's a problem, but that's something I want to know the answer to.
Well,
I think we ought to go ahead with it. As much as I hate it.
But you know you have another truck behind that.
Yeah.
We've got another truck coming right behind it. Yeah. Maybe a wee bit bigger price tag.
Now, that truck, we are not trying to cash fund. That's a debt fund. But it's still a lot of money, yes.
What do you think?
Well,
you know, I mean, if it's like $1,000 to fix it and, you know, gets fine for a little while, that's one thing. It's $5,000, that's another thing. But to Mr. Lai's point, it's ultimately money that isn't going to be well spent. I would certainly say that this is your point in terms of finding what that would cost you. It's a fair point, but it's something that would be.
Yeah. And it is what, 27, 28 years old?
28 years old.
Yeah, that's about as old as my truck.
Going back.
It's still 28 years old.
That's pretty good life, isn't it?
I got a 2005, and I'm sorry, good money. Every time I turn, I fix one thing, something else.
Maybe you got a lemon.
I'm going to have to. No, it's 2005.
But it's a Paul Toyota, isn't it? You put a little heavy on the. Maybe that's it.
I would like to say I've seen the truck, and you take very good care of it.
We try to, yes, ma'am.
It's very clean.
It doesn't do it, but not feel good. It's not acting well.
All right.
I just think we're in a corner.
Well, let's make a motion.
Do we have a motion?
I move the Board of Supervisors to approve a supplemental appropriation.
Yeah, I was jumping.
From unassigned fund balance to the CIP project budget for the fire and rescue vehicle apparatus to change funding for Lake Monticello Support 56 water rescue truck from debt to cash funding.
Do we have a second?
Sorry, maybe if it's not correctly.
I'll second it. I don't know. I'll give you one second. We have a motion made by Ms. Booker and second by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-1. That's 2014-5-2020. Ms. Booker.
This is for the replacement of engine 20 for Fork Union Fire. It was approved in the FY20 CIP as debt funded in the amount of $600,000. This engine was requested in the FY21 CIP but was moved forward during the FY20 budget process. The cost of a new engine equipped as requested per fork unit is $655,000. Now, I will say we have just recently gotten the specs for the engine, and our procurement manager hasn't really had time to go out and shop this to see if we could find a different or perhaps better price. But this request is to increase the remount budget in the CIP to $655,000 to be debt funded for this engine.
I'm here to answer any questions on that. And Chief Allen's here as well.
Chief Allen's sitting right there.
Yeah, so he can join me here. Because he can talk about the technical part of it. I can give you some of the background on it. So if you recall, this was actually budgeted for next year. But in last year's budget process, because of the way you wanted to debt fund everything, we swapped an engine and an ambulance and moved this forward and the ambulance back so that it could be packaged in the debt funding. At that time, Fork Union had not been able to prepare a set of specifications, so we did not have a good price for you at that time. So what we ended up having to do was base it off the last fire engine that we purchased, which was the Palmyra fire engine,
engine 10,
and build in an allowance for inflation, which was, as I recall, was about 10%. So that was a guess at that time, and we warned you that it was a guess. As it turns out, the cost of construction for this engine has gone up significantly more than we had expected, particularly due to the cost of steel and aluminum. An equivalent engine to tanker engine 10 now would be about $780,000. So Fork Union has done an exceptionally good job at reducing the cost of their engine to get it down to $655,000 from what it originally would have been. Chief Alley can tell you more about exactly what they've done to get that price down and the reasons for it.
Along with the additional increase in metal, there were a couple of EPA changes and also DOT changes, which increased cost of apparatus as they happen year after year. We started out at like $740,000. We worked very hard on this truck. We've got it within $55,000 of the budget given to us. We've gone into not only the wants, but also down to, like, for instance, the axles on the truck. One brand versus another brand was $5,000 or $6,000, somewhere in there, less money. Just as safe, just as good, same weight rating, everything. Wouldn't change anything on the truck, but the little things like that, like the wheels, and things that most people wouldn't even go into to try to reduce the cost of the truck. And there is no extras on this truck. It is basically it's a custom pumper, midship pump, and I know, Mike, you're probably the only one that really understands what I'm saying on this.
A little bit. I don't know a lot. I didn't do a lot
with basically what I would call a rescue body, because it's got high side compartments on both sides. There's not much extra on it. It's just a basic fire engine with the discharges and intakes that you need to be a Class A pumper.
Let me ask you a question. What's the difference between this one and the pumper that Company 3 purchased recently?
I was ready for that. So,
because I've got both the prices here, so I'm just because I could see what the big difference is between the actual truck and the options. So,
yeah, I've not totally looked at Kenstore specs,
sure.
But one of the big things is the cab. When you go from a custom cab to a commercial cab, there's a significant decrease in cost. I don't have the exact numbers. But
just on here, it's a $200,000 decrease in costs between the custom and the regular.
Right, it's the cost of the
cab. No, granted, that was a year ago. So
reduced costs of the extra airbags that come with the custom, the rollover protection stuff. And that's the big thing when you go to commercial cab. Plus, there's studies on the space in the cab. If there's a rollover and a crushing incident, there's more room for survival. The ease of getting in and out of the truck with air packs, visibility, it's there are, you know, they're built for one job, and that's for firefighting. And granted, we picked the least expensive custom cab that we could possibly get. It is nowhere near as fancy as anything else that we have in the county. There are approximately 30,000 fire apparatus crashes a year. The crashes in fire truck rollovers are the number two thing for firefighter fatalities. Number one is heart attacks. When you go to a commercial cab, you lose all the extra airbags and stuff that help protect these people. And I feel like we'd be sacrificing safety if we went to a commercial cab at this point. That's my stance on it. That's where I'm at. Plus, the other thing too is you also have slippers and resistant surfaces and stuff on the custom cabs that you don't have on the commercial cabs, which would be more like a commercial cabs are more like a basically what a road tractor would look like, but extended so it has the back seats and all like the custom cabs do. So that's what I have.
How many airbags are in the custom that aren't in the?
There are. Well, not only do you have the airbags in the front, you got extra frontal airbags. Plus, you've got airbags all down the sides, and it basically closes up the cab for the most part. I mean, when they go off, and you know, hope and pray that it never happens if they're in the county again. I mean, we had one back in the 80s. And Cosmoboys, and I hope that never happens again. But it's a reality that we all face. And out of every 500 crashes, there is at least one fatality. I've got numbers. I researched this.
How many different bids did y'all get? I know that's one of the big ways that Kent Store got their costs down is that they got companies competing against one another.
We talked to Atlantic. I've been on the phone with E1 and a couple others. I'm having a hard time getting them down here just to even build a truck with.
So there's only one.
The other thing too with other manufacturers is you got to get them. There's Atlantic is the only one that has service in this area. To get them service anywhere else, you got to go to Roanoke or some of the manufacturers. You got to go into the Carolinas. I don't have anybody that will even, I mean, we don't have anybody on staff that can even do that. And plus, we've invested in the Pierce brand as far as our engines go. Everything we have is uniform. I can go to Lake Monticello and operate Chief Constantino's trucks. He can come over and operate our trucks. American Store, whoever, we've all got pretty uniform.
What do you think about that?
As far as our large apparatus goes.
How old is the one? Are you adding one or replacing?
Replacing. Engine 20 is currently a 1993 truck, so it should have been replaced in 2013. Is that right?
Yes.
And it was put off for quite a while, and then this past year in the budget talks, you all moved it back again, which I was nowhere near prepared for that. So we just threw out an off-the-hip number right there in the work session. And, you know, it wasn't... There was no
time to
even make a phone call.
So those airbags, there's a difference of about $200,000 on having that packed with airbags around you and all. Is that
that's probably not the full $200,000? Because that price that Mr. Dahl quoted was from an engine that was quoted a year ago. So. That price has probably gone up, but this one's
in January of 2019. This one's in October of 2019, and the price for the commercial cab was $222, and the price for the custom cab is $439. So that's the difference.
So we already have money in the CIP.
It's debt funded.
So it's $59,000.
They're asking for additional $55,000 in debt funding.
Yeah.
To go into debt.
Right, which is, yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So this is not a cash request.
If you had to make a choice between the suits that you need to go inside the fire or this truck? Which would you pick?
You're talking about the
CBS?
Oh, the SCBA, that has to happen.
The airbags have to happen.
If one of the vehicles have to be put off, I mean, it's, that's in y'all's hands. You know, nothing's been ordered yet.
So yeah. In the long run, the further out we defer maintenance and or replacement of vehicles, the more it's going to be. And the reality is, we're still years away from capturing other sources of revenue. So either we're debt funding, or we're raising taxes, or both, and that's just the reality of it.
Nothing is going
to cost as much as
Mr. Wright, to add to your statement, Engine 20 is a nickel and dime vehicle now because it's getting so old. Mm-hmm. We still use it. It takes, you know, almost every time it goes back, it's got to get something fixed on it because it's just, it's got a lot of age on it. It's wore out, and it's getting hard to find parts for it because the technology is so much greater than what that truck was in 1993. And unfortunately, the cost of that apparatus has skyrocketed since then. I think that truck was upper 200s or low $300,000 truck back in those days, and now they're.
I mean, it's no question that the county needs to replace its apparatus. There's no question. My only question is, do we need to go custom or do we need to go commercial? There's not even a question that apparatus needs to be replaced. It's a fact of what they do, and they need current apparatus. But you know, that's what the board has to decide.
The only two firefighters that were killed here were in a crash, right?
What's that?
That's correct. That's the only fit, right? That's the only fatalities that you know we've ever had.
Yes, sir. Mr. Chief Brent, I'm going to spit it out in a second. I've only known you for
100 years. Yeah.
The two firefighters that were killed were in a commercial cab tanker apparatus. That was back in the day when you could use gasoline tankers for fire apparatus.
Didn't have seatbelt on.
No, it didn't have seatbelt. It was 1968, I think it was, in pre-seatbelt. That thing was a pre-seatbelt apparatus before the seatbelts came out. But one thing I'd like to say about the safety, I'm not going to discuss the cost issue, but the safety is, the folks here are the biggest asset you have in this county. And I would love to put it in the safest apparatus I can. These custom cabs are structurally built to withstand rollovers. The airbags are there for the total surround protection. Plus, the one thing that hasn't been mentioned is the type of axle on it, which is the tank four suspension is a better road suspension. You can't get that suspension on a commercial cab. But from a safety standpoint, we talked about the benefits for the firefighters in the county. I want to see our people in the safest apparatus we can get for the money. And this is a safe apparatus. All the other engines in the county that we purchased in the last, since the 2000s, are commercial cabs with the airbags and the safety equipment. And the structural integrity.
So we don't have airbags in our new engine?
Your new engine? I expect you have just a commercial airbag, whatever that is. It's probably dash.
Whatever comes on that, whatever cab you're getting.
Whatever cab.
Whatever.
I'm not.
I don't know whether you're getting a freight liner or what you're getting.
It's a freight liner.
It's probably just.
I've stayed out of those weeds because
I haven't been involved in that. I was without. Asked to be a part of that selection on the selection committee, so I don't know what the safety features are in the cable.
So, what did the fire engine do? Roll over or something and the two died? How did that?
Yes, the engine, tanker rolled over and both of the firefighters were ejected.
Oh, he ejected.
Yeah, and it rolled over. Ooh. And just looking at the damage to the cab and chassis, they would have a good chance of surviving if they had the seatbelts on.
Yeah.
But again, or if they had, but they didn't have, like you said, they didn't have seat belts.
That's what I was going to ask. If they rejected, it's reason for seat belts.
Yeah, and there was no back then too. There was no seat belt law.
Mm-hmm.
But you always put your seat belts on when you go to a fire.
Yes,
oh yeah,
absolutely. It's a, it's,
you got bells and whistles. A truck won't. You get in the truck and you sit down in your seat. As soon as you sit in the seat, if you're not buckled up, all sorts of lights and things come on to you.
There's sensors in every seat. And a question about the airbags on the commercial cab, I believe, and without making a phone call, I can be for sure, but I believe all you get is the airbag in the steering wheel and the airbag in the passenger front seat and nothing in the back for the people back in the back seat. So, you know,
make sure you're in the officer's seat.
How many people usually
sit
in the back?
I don't wear
a car. We have the capability in pretty much all our trucks to put four in the back. Two in the front, four in the back.
Yeah, the commercial.
Six people all together.
Commercial cabs are six person. I believe, I'm not sure, but the, I think that's a.
The custom cabs are six. It's, I think six, yeah. I think y'all's is a 6 minute.
Just not as high.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Another thing you got to look at too is, you know, some of the extra stuff that Ken Store's getting is, in my opinion, it's got a pump, it's got water, it's an engine. It's classified as an engine, but it's kind of like a squad truck, too. And I think every area in the county has their different needs. But my biggest stance on the between the two is the safety of the individuals that ride in that vehicle every day. Because you want to say that you won't have any more, but it happens. That's what everybody hopes it
happens.
And sometimes it doesn't even have to be the people in the fire truck's fault. It can be, you know,
yeah,
someone else.
Well, there are five
riders
involved in accidents all over the state of Virginia. Probably, I don't want to say a weekly basis, but at least a monthly basis, you got to have five drivers involved in something. So.
Okay.
Hopefully, it's not the time it's involved.
Okay.
Okay. Any other questions?
I move the Board of Supervisors approve a supplemental appropriation of $5,000 to the CIP budget. Fire rescue vehicle apparatus to have additional debt limit of $14,120 to the previously approved debt limit of $600,000.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Chair votes nay. Motion passes 3-1.
Let me ask Tony something here. He
and I'm
trying to figure out what he meant. You said that we don't have any more means to capturing money. What did you mean by that?
What I mean by that is the levers that we have are the levers we've always had. We haven't changed any of those. We haven't paid more income than meals tax. We haven't changed any of our land use policies. And we don't have a business license or a vehicle tax at all. So the only levers that we are going to get outside of that from the commercial growth is going to be from sales tax growth. And until we have the water projects in place, we're not going to see that. Even once that happens, it's still going to take a period of time. And so I can't see where we're going to have huge amounts of extra money in place over the next 4 to 5 years that are going to meet the needs that we're deferring. So we're going to have to take on additional debt. Now, I know it's disappointing to have to take on more debt, and I know you're focused on that, and I appreciate that. But there was a time when we had $110 million worth of debt. Now we're going to get $95 million, and in 3 years we dropped like what?
$5-6 million a year.
$5-6 million a year, but we also drop a payment very significantly.
Yep, we're going to drop.
And that when that payment drops, that's going to be nice. That's going to be a little bit of a windfall from the standpoint of the burden of the tax rate there. But, you know, if we continue to postpone these things, at some point in time, we're still going to have to debt fund it. And in my opinion, whether we debt fund it today, when interest rates are 2.5% or something like that, or whether we debt fund it tomorrow, when then maybe the interest rates are higher, is really irrelevant at secondary, because we're still just going to have to debt fund it. That's just the way I look at it. Because we don't have the cash to pay for it. And we
right.
You know, we have to build our reserve fund back up. That's just the reality. Yeah, so. I don't like that, but you know, there's a reason for it. At least
yeah, there sure
debt.
Is a reason for it.
At least it's cheap debt. Well, I mean, what money are we setting aside right now for the next office building that we're going to have to buy? What money are we setting aside for the next school?
Well, are you going to go ahead and build it, period?
Well, I mean, but at some point in time, you have to build another school, right? Whether it's now or 100 years from now, you're going to have to build another school at some point.
So you're planning on that?
No, I'm just saying the reality is that the county will continue to grow, will continue to face pressures. It has assets that depreciate and that deplete. And we don't have a mechanism in our MRRs at all. We don't fully fund our MRRs. So the reality is we will face larger expenditures and we will have to buy things. And unless we're saving that money for it right now, most likely we're going to do that through debt or we're going to do it by increasing taxes to fund it in that year.
What's the interest rate on some of this debt that we have? Can it be reduced on the interest rates, or is it for a certain length of time?
All the debt that we have is rock bottom minimum. Any debt that we've refunded previously, we can't do anything. We have nothing to quote-unquote refinance. We are, I mean, the debt that we've taken out in the past 2 to 3 years for the radio project, for the energy project, for... I know there's something else. Oh, the Zion's Crossroads project. I mean, Zion's Crossroads, I don't remember what it was, but it's probably, you know, in the 3% range. The energy project, we're less than 1%. The tower project, I think we're like around 1.25%, 1.5%. So, the debt that we're taking out, I mean, if you call it, you know, whatever you want to do, it was smart to take it out at the rates that we got it, so...
Well, and factor in the fact that, you know, there is inflation. So the reality is...
Not much anymore. Not like that.
I don't know. I mean, you know, the cost of a project today, you know, like, for example, in the case of the schools, when they were first looking at the building, they were talking about $55 million. 20 years later, it was $80 million.
Not really. That was a dud, I tell you.
Well, I'm just saying that the cost of building something is always going to be more tomorrow than it is today.
That's about $10 million more than should have been spent, and most people
are sure.
I'm
not going to say sure it was more than needed to be spent, but it was spent, and it is what it is from that standpoint. But what I'm trying to point out is the fact that at 3% interest and, say, 1.5% inflation rate, the cost of money is 1.5%. That's pretty good. That's pretty darn good.
And what you...
And another thing is, we never understood the cost of the high school. If we had just constructed a high school, it would have been $68 million. We have a comprehensive high school. We have a high school that built for expansion. We had to do the ball fields. We had to do the stadium. We did tech. We did it's a comprehensive high school because we have a career and a tech center. Our cafeteria is built to expand. We have 6 bad places for lunch. We use 3 of them, and we ever have to add on. Our library is equipped for an enrollment of 72,000 students. We built middle school to meet the amount of kids. In a couple of years, we can go back and add on to it. We couldn't expand the lunchroom, so we feed kids all up to 1:30. We don't, and during the time we built that high school, things were cheaper because people wanted work because it was a time right after 2008. So we've never quite understood that we really did get a bargain for that high school. Because we were sending kids to Houston and driving them up on 64 to go and get technical skills. We got right there in the building. So.
Regardless, we're past that one.
Always comes up.
And going back to your point,
huh?
This was a conversation we had, what was it, 2 years ago? No, when we talked about consolidating debt, getting rid of bad interest rates and refinancing. We went back and did that 2 years ago, and I don't think we're going to be able to
The rates have really changed within the last... year, 18 months, they've made a drastic.
The construction stuff, you're down. Right. Most of the time it goes up, and it's really gone up since we've gotten into the trade war, but that's a conversation for somebody else.
No, they've been coming down for the last year or 18 months drastically.
All right. Weather, let's go ahead and get this done. G, weather and emergency closure.
Nice.
Closure policy update, October 2019.
I'm not going to actually cost anything.
Is this a new policy?
This is a, so what this is part of our personnel policy that we have in place, and it falls under leave and holidays, and this is a section that, like we've discussed, my kind of ongoing project here, this is a 2004 policy. So in the policy, there's some things that were very vaguely written. It also did not give instructions for what employees are supposed to do or who had to come back in and work. If there was an emergency, there were no provisions for a county administrator. If he's on vacation, then what? Kind of a thing. So all this is just an update of that personnel policy. And the biggest driver for this, well, there was two of them. One is we're heading into the winter, obviously. And then the other one is that we had so many payroll blips, we'll call it, every time there was a closure, because there was confusion on who was supposed to work, who's getting paid when, who's getting paid for the closure, how much they're going to get paid. And so this was to just tighten that up. And so I had worked with the sheriff's office and public works and utilities and finance to kind of button this up so that it's very specific as far as what happens if we shut down facilities. So that's what this update is for you.
It's really to talk about essential employees, like how do essential employees that have to work during, you know, weather-related events and stuff like that, how are they getting paid? Do they get paid double time? What are the hours that they get paid for the weather-related event and all that?
So this is the updated document.
That is
everything
the updated
is here.
One. Yes. It is.
Let me make a suggestion. In the past, what they've done, they put what the original was, then
yes,
they put a line through it.
That's what I was looking for.
And I kept looking through here. I had no idea the changes that have been made.
I will speak to that. I had left that out, and that was only because it was so hard to read with all the formatting changes. I thought it would just be cleaner to put the updated version
cleaner,
in there and
I
talk through it.
I'm approving and disapproving.
So that's fine.
So I'm going to have to wait on that until I can see, I think. What do you think?
Well, I thought, I mean, a user is red mark.
Yeah.
So you know what's
right.
Red.
Yeah.
So I thought it was maybe a new but anyway, I don't need to wait. I mean, I'm okay.
So for the future, what we
sure,
we talked about that, we will definitely make sure that the redline version goes in.
Does it not make sense?
No, it does. I understand from your standpoint, you want to see what it was before to what it is now to see
right.
What the changes were.
Or even hand out two copies and maybe you can figure out the difference.
No
redline.
Yeah.
No redline.
Okay.
I have a question.
Sure.
How much is the closure pay?
The closure pay is the same rate that an employee earns during their normal hours of work. It's their base rate. It's not
it's double time,
an
basically.
Hour and a half or anything like that. So what you end up getting paid is you're paid for your regular schedule that you would have worked, and then you would also get paid for the physical work you did when you came in. So closure pay, in essence, is almost like holiday pay, if you think of it that way.
And holiday pay is?
Is an employee's normal rate of pay for their hours.
Yeah, like for instance, say it's an 8-hour day and it's snowing out and the county calls off, you know, most staff because of just the snow event, but say the public works crew has to come in and plow snow and get everything ready all day long and say they work 8 hours. Well, they get 8 hours of closure pay and they get 8 hours of the actual hours that they worked. And we've been doing that like that now, but we kind of define the time frame for when that closure event takes place. And we work with the sheriff's office too, because you know they get some, they get a little difference in their hours because they may work from, say, they work from 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. We'll say that we do a closure event and it should only be from like 12 a.m. on. Well, then that means they shouldn't get paid the double time from the 7 p.m. until 12 p.m. They should only get from the 12 a.m. going on.
Is that normal to get double time?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And if we have an employee that is not required to come in, that they get paid anyway.
They just get paid the closure
paid normal hours.
So. In reality, I'm actually hoping to see a little bit of savings during this because we had a lot of confusion in the past. Some folks were probably getting paid for more hours than what we normally would have paid them. And again, it's just part of this update and trying to tighten things up so that it's better for the county.
More definitive.
And better for the employees, too. Uh-huh. Yeah. We don't want them in here working if they don't need to be. So.
Okay, I move the Board of Supervisors approve the updated County Personnel Policy 2.13, Leave and Holiday Section 2.13.8, Weather and Emergency Closures, as presented.
Second.
Motion made by Ms. Egan, seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. We'll now move forward with appointments. H, Social Services Board. Ms. Felice.
Oh, well, I guess I'll take this.
Mr. Dahl?
We have one appointment for the Social Services Board, Martha Brown. And like I said, I can open up the application if you want to see.
Do you have anyone else to apply?
Caitlin, can you tell me? No.
We've been without this person, I think, since June when Tom Payne retired.
Mm-hmm. She's already been here.
No, she'll be new.
She'll be taking his place.
Yes.
Before he had to come off because
right.
he's been there for the
yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I know that. I'm just wondering.
I'm like you.
Another person. I don't know. I didn't see social services.
She's the only person who's come forward.
Okay.
Do
we have a motion?
I move that the Board of Supervisors approve the following board member, Martha Brown, for Social Services Board, from 11-6-2019 to 6-30-2023.
Second.
Motion made by Mrs. Higger, seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. And Mr. Saunders, y'all have waited so patiently. We'll now begin with our presentations. First up, the IVDOT quarterly update, Mr. Saunders.
Chairman and members of the board. My name is Bethel Cafialo. I'm the assistant residency engineer in Louisa Residency, and with me I have Alan Saunders, the residency engineer. And I'm just going to briefly go over the latest monthly report, and then Alan's actually going to go over the anything you need to know about Smart Scale Round 4 for the next several months. So scroll down a little bit. Yeah, so we've included some of the key dates for Smart Scale Round 4. Again, Alan's going to go over that a little bit later. As far as projects go, the roundabout at 53 and 618 is still on schedule. It's going to be advertised this month. And so we are open to meeting with Effort Baptist Church and the community and the board to discuss the sequence of construction, to discuss the schedule so that there are no surprises and the project progresses smoothly. The Rural Rustic project at 618 and also the bridge replacement at 629 were both completed in the last quarter. And the PE only studies, the surveys are in progress. 659 has in Columbia has already been, it's in progress, and then letters have been sent out for the survey in Palmyra. So I think you guys have received that here, and they'll be starting that soon. And then the intersection improvements at 600 and 618, they are in the process right now of doing a floodplain analysis to determine what the extent of the scoping for the project is going to be. So that's underway. And there is a new task order that has been issued for our Rumble Strips contract. So these are the new routes that are going to be getting centerline in the next several months, as well as an edgeline Rumble Strip on Route 53 from the county line to Route 600. That's an additional one that's not on this list that will be getting edgeline Rumble Strips in the next several months.
Would you say that again? From which?
It's Route 53 from the Albemarle-Fluvanna County line okay. to Route 600.
Okay.
And as far as our traffic engineering and county safety operational improvements, in the last quarter, we completed the tree removal and grading work at 629 and 631. And then something that's not on this list is that we have procured 4 radar signs that we are that we have and we're evaluating and prioritizing routes to place them at. And so if you have any suggestions for placement for radar signs and also in any other areas for county safety and operational improvements, please let us know.
Is that for, what is that, like, is it like a permanent radar sign or just like temporary to move from place to place?
Yep, it's a temporary sign. It has a battery that can last about 3 weeks, and we would just place that. It could be at a curve warning sign, a speed limit sign.
I'll tell you what, when we were doing the Columbia cleanup day, people were not going 35 miles an hour right in front of our property there. It was far exceeded 35 miles an hour.
Yeah. So any suggestions that you guys have for where we could place those that would be beneficial, and then we could rotate them around, get the battery lasts around 3 weeks.
For the Riverside Day, Riverside,
that's crazy. And down there around the bridge, you know, you can't put it on the bridge, but on either end of the bridge down there, put it on the north side of the bridge. Just get those guys coming down the hill about 65, 70 miles.
And the last thing is that our area headquarters at Palmyra and Southern Crossroads have completed about 235 work orders so far this fiscal year. So they've been hard at work, and we're appreciative for everything that they do to support you.
And VDOT is fantastic. And once you're done, we've got a couple things I just wanted to just follow up on. Like I said, we did the Columbia cleanup day. We left 50 orange bags down there.
And yesterday I was approached by one of the people manning the poles. I said, hey, like how we cleaned up and how much stuff we got? He goes, it's still there. Yes, sir, the orange bags.
The orange bags.
We left those on the side and put them in your dumpster.
And also, as we spoke about before, on Andrew Street, which is right there off Route 6, there was basically, for lack of better words, a mini landfill going on there. And it's basically VDOT right away. There's like what would be considered an old street right there. And we did a huge, huge cleanup there. And then actually right down the embankment, right down the other side, I sent you an email.
That's where 90% of the GIS.
I'm not sure what can be done about that, but it's like this little open street that people, it's a nice pull-off.
They just back in, dump, and throw real fast, and leave.
A game cam that's got a blue strobe on it when they get back there.
So yeah.
Problem with that is that'll end up disappearing.
Yeah, you're right, they'll take it too. It is.
So the Lake Monticello Monish Gate. So the GM from Lake Monticello reached out to me about wanting to discuss. He sent me a letter. I don't know if the board
got one.
Mrs. Peter got it. Just saying, what are some of the issues that they see with the, only the left in, left out type of thing, once the roundabout comes in and blocking it off. And they listed issues of secondary traffic hazard, kind of right path from Monish Gate. There's that little,
where it used to be a road or something. Right. And people were going to go down there and turn around and put their freight up. Mm-hmm. Chief Constantino.
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Miller.
Thank you.
I remember them saying something about emergency vehicles. That would be an issue with emergency vehicles. Chief Constantino is chief of the lake. Mm-hmm. What would that be, Chief Constantino?
Well, if we have to get into the lake coming, I guess it would be eastbound 153. We wouldn't be able to make the turn into the Monish Gate.
Do we have any? Does Albemarle supply any trucks that would come down that road?
Yes, Albemarle Station 2, which is right back. We use our mutual aid, they come in that way as well. What you have to go over there?
That was just one of the things for us.
I know.
All of our companies would be coming.
I know Lake Monticello
West only.
Lake Monticello also listed school buses and stuff. There'd be additional commute times and issues for the school buses having to come in and out of there. So that's just another thing. Like I said, the letter's right there with with kind of what some of their issues are.
I'll follow up on this. When we met with the Lake Monticello Owners Association in March, we were there to talk about safety. And one of the topics that did come up was Monish Gate. And once the roundabout is installed, making a right turn out of the Monish Gate, going to the roundabout to come east on 53, limiting the left turns out of the gate is a rational choice, considering the volume of crashes. We've had 16 crashes there since 2013, some of them injury, most of them due to left turns coming out of the entrance. So once the roundabout is installed, similar to Effort Church, if I had my family in a minivan, I would rather go up to the roundabout, turn around, and come back than make a left-hand turn into traffic. So in that circumstance, that was one of the topics that we discussed in March. But we're open to any feedback from the community. I know that Monish Gate has been a safety concern long before Alan came to the Louisa Residency. And that is something that if we have an opportunity with the construction of the roundabout to improve safety at the lake, we want to do that. One of the topics that was proposed in that March meeting was another entrance that would help improve the timelines for traffic to enter and exit the lake to go another direction where they could still leverage the roundabout and its efficiencies to get in and out. And we're open to any suggestions. We're really limited there in right-of-way. There's a Virginia Outdoor Foundation easement on the west side, south side of 53, that limits us to the south, and residences to the north. We're really boxed in there with options to do. Right-in, right-out is a rational choice. It's low cost, and we've got a roundabout where anyone exiting that gate can go around the roundabout and then come south. And it would eliminate the bulk, especially the injury crashes we've seen at that intersection. So that's a tool in the toolbox, but we're wide open to any suggestions the community would have for improving, and not just Monish, but you bring up Riverside, and that is another location where the speeds are too high. If we wouldn't ruin our snowplows, we could put a speed hump there, and that would really slow them down. But we see a lot of persistent high speeds through that corridor, despite your efforts to enforce it, our additional signage, and there are other tools that we have to calm traffic that we need to continue to look at on that side of the lake as well. So we're wide open to any improvements. But I'll respond back to the letter, and meet with them.
I don't know what the board wants to do. I don't know if you and yourself, me, and maybe Mr. Steve Hurwitz could meet to discuss, you know, what their concerns are.
That would be great.
Yeah,
as the roundabout project approaches, we wanted to meet with the lake and then Effort Church as well to really build a stakeholder communication plan about the sequence of construction and a Facebook page or any type of communication tools that we can have to generate awareness about what the project's going to be doing. And we would like to meet and go over those things as well.
Yeah, I was at the meeting in March with you, mm-hmm. and at that time I thought that they were embraced the safety feature of only right in, right out.
Well, I'm sure that they probably did, and some other people came back and brought up these issues that might arise.
And they also have bought, Lake Monticello owns a piece of property next to Effort Church.
On Monticello Road?
Right, so that they had talked about, they bought it because they wanted to...
then you could have a right in right there.
Yeah.
So if somebody's coming from the west, they could take Lake Monticello Road and then turn into the left. That would alleviate the emergency vehicles.
If I may, supervise any discussions that you're going to have with the lake regarding that area, I would appreciate if you involved fire and rescue in those discussions as well, because we are dating that they are our policies and what our feelings are.
And a lot of times they won't think about something that...
Yeah. Also, I don't see a reason why fire and rescue couldn't do left if it was that important. You know, you don't want everybody to do it.
Well, I mean, if you put some type of barricade on them, you know, the barricade,
plastic
yeah. things.
PVC delineator. They're cheap. They're sacrificial. They don't damage a vehicle. And then we have them all over the place. And it'll prohibit most folks from turning left into them. But it doesn't prohibit an emergency vehicle or someone else when they really need to make a left turn, should they. But again, that was just a quick proposal that we pitched in 5 minutes. We're wide open to any suggestions there, and we would include the community in any type of permanent.
Can't do one quarter mile to the roundabout.
Right.
It's not far.
Yeah. It is. Adds a couple of minutes, if that, and I would choose inconvenience over.
If you right. talk about the school buses, I'm sure they can design the routes to come out down the Turkey Center.
Right.
Mm-hmm. This was brought to my attention by a Boy Scout, and he presented it to me, asked me to come to his house, and he showed me what he thought was the danger, and then I contacted Mr. Saunders, and that's how that was initiated. I just thought that was kind of cool.
It was. He had some great ideas. He did.
The boy who initiated it was House Connects. Yeah. And we presented House Connects. Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. So the whole family are going to be Gold Stars or Eagle Scouts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's very good. I was just going to add one thing. Just driving around the community where they came back and did the resurfacing and the relining, they've started to collect the signs. They've had signs left out. I've had a few people call me out. One that's called me the most, theirs got picked up. It's killing my grass. I didn't want to advise her that the grass wasn't growing in November.
Try to
make sure that I bring forth everything that they bring up.
Thank you.
One item I want to close for Mr. Weaver. So Mr. Weaver, Blue Mountain Road. I've had lots of conversations with Matt Tholen and Alan about Blue Mountain Road. So to close the loop on that, basically.
Okay.
And I know you've been looped into that email and in communications. It's off of Rolling
Six,
Road.
620. It's off 620.
Rolling Road. Yeah. So basically, those homeowners on that road, it is basically either the county. Well, it is. Basically, the homeowners that can put the funding in there to upgrade the road for the county.
Right.
If the county were to do that, I would imagine that would be a slippery slope.
I've already told her that I wouldn't approve of that.
I know. So that's kind of where that one falls in. That's there's not much the county can do. And I know she was talking about there's money in the 6-year plan, but the amount. So right now our 6-year plan's already the funds are already allocated through 2025. So if we wanted to put it on the 6-year plan after that, well, what's the amount we get every year? $5,000?
Is that a gravel road?
It is a portion of the funding that you receive for unpaved roads, which is a percentage of $14,000, and then it would be any telefee funds that are in your 6-year plan. And again, it would be up to the county.
Yeah, so I mean, if the county wanted to say, we want to pave Blue Mountain Road in 2025, that would... on a road that's and not to those residents it's important, but those funds would not be serving a lot of residents.
No, but just probably five houses is all.
It's not that many people down there.
That's right, five houses.
It's five.
Yeah, so it wouldn't, and I've already told her that.
Do you have anything else? Because I have a few.
Yeah, I have a few, but I'll let you go first, and then I'll ask you quickly.
Okay.
I've
had a call from Mr. Charles Lehman, and I have his phone number here. He lives on North Boston. No, he lives on Troy Road, just to the left where 600 and 633 come together, and you have to turn left to be on Troy Road. You turn right, you're on North Boston. And there's an accident that happened there, and was a truck that ran into a tree. The man had been, and the tree was in this man's yard. He said, fortunately, the tree stopped the truck, or it might have hit the house. He had the accident, had just come off of a 12-hour shift, and he fell asleep. And so Mr. Lehman thought if you could put the rumble strips, they stop at where 600 turns left, off of North Boston, if you could extend them at least to maybe the curve, because there's been several accidents in front of his house.
Okay.
But I have his phone number here for you.
Yes, ma'am. Okay, great.
And then I have another email from Frances Franco, and she lives on Bybee Church Road, And
yeah, I just emailed Ms. Franco yesterday because she was asking about getting center lines on Miami Church Road, and VDOT came back and said that
it's too narrow.
Well, one, there's not consistent width of the road, and the traffic count is generally not what it takes for the 500 vehicles per day to recommend doing a center line on that road.
They started in the bridge road.
She responded back with a couple questions. Well, why doesn't VDOT widen the road to 18 feet? And then, what was the other question? I'll see if I can find it while you're going.
Okay. And this one, email is from Kara Thomas, who lives on 250. This kind of has to do with the schools as well as VDOT. They have a 7-year-old little girl, and she has to get on the bus right on 250 near Fieldstone. Mm. And you've been kind enough to put in a sign for them where it says school bus stop ahead on the same side of the road, coming from on the same side of the road as Fieldstone. It's on a hill, and as you come up the hill, you can't really see that there's a bus stop there. So you kindly put in this sign saying bus stop ahead. But they have a problem with people going on the entrance of the Fieldstone. So the bus stops there, little girl gets off, and cars have been coming where they could have hit her. And they also have had trouble with people not stopping when the bus stop is stopped with the lights on. They just keep going. And I've also talked to Mr. Stribling about it. He's our assistant principal.
He's back
here. You there?
He's
yeah.
He's
hi there.
Captain Wells also needs to know about that.
Yeah. And
Captain Wells
you and I have talked about this, and I've also talked to the sheriff, asking him to make, you know, during the school bus stop times, to try to have an officer there, at least a presence to let people know that we really are watching.
Is that but, getting on and getting off?
Well, getting, I don't know how she gets on it,
yeah,
which way the bus comes, but definitely getting off
I'm
the bus.
If she lives in that little road that's right across from Fieldstone.
Redskins.
They stop in the middle, and then she has to cross the road.
Yeah, it's just before the entrance. It's called Redskins Lane.
Mm-hmm.
You
right,
probably
right,
know that.
Almost right across.
Right, yeah. So anyway, this is information back and forth that she and I have had about that. It's another thing that we were hoping is, and this has to do with the school system, is to get, I know our school buses don't have cameras, but maybe they should have cameras, particularly if we can only afford a few on roads that are like 250 and 15, where the dangerous roads where children to get off and on and cross. So I know you want to have more cameras, but
you talk about an exterior, almost like an arm camera.
Arm cameras.
Because at least then you could get the license plate of the offenders, because sometimes it happens so fast.
The problem is we have to see them. If we don't know who's driving it, then
is that right?
They can do
well,
it.
How would you know who's driving it?
Yeah, that's better than asking.
I thought you got the license plate, and that would do something.
I thought a camera would take a picture of it.
I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but if you got a license plate, they might make a stop by and say, "Hey, this vehicle is seen doing this." But if you don't see who the driver is,
we instruct our drivers to call transportation, and then we notify the sheriff's department and our SROs on site. And if we can get the license plate, then we do a stop by.
There you go.
Yeah. We'll stop and say this is unsafe. We'll stop and say it's unsafe. You can't write a ticket, because I've had people in the driver, when I'm in the driver's aid car, pass me on double lines, pass me the stop sign, pass me about anywhere, and I've gotten his license plate.
But I do like the idea of the external camera.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Telescope camera.
Stop sign. I think that's where they have some on sometimes.
Can they do that? Telescope cameras? Are there telescope cameras?
There are devices that go with their extras.
Mm-hmm. I think it'd be worth it at that spot. Whatever. That'd be the county.
Thank you.
Going back to the East Church Road, is there anything, because she said something about, well, if the stretch of the road that's two-thirds of the length has the 500 vehicles per day, could that receive a center line? Or does it basically boil down to you need the width and the vehicle count?
We'll look at crash history, roadway geometry, okay, and determine if a pavement marking will help.
Yeah, she said something.
Because we can use edge lines in some locations or center lines, yeah, in some locations, and traffic engineer will give us. And we can use some artistic license and try to determine.
And what she was saying, even if the portion of Bayou's Church Road between Route 15 and Route 608, the portion that has over the 500 vehicles per day, she said that seems to be the portion that's more problematic. So.
Well, the 15 to that doesn't have the 500 vehicles. That's the one that doesn't have a line. It's the line's on the other end from Ridge. I guess 608 is Ridge.
Oh, I don't know. She was just saying right on Bobby Shirk Road between 15 and 608. That's where there's no center line.
There's no center line, correct.
And she's saying there is, I think there was over 500 vehicles per day on that stretch of the road.
If we have sufficient pavement width and there is a concern about safety of traveling public, and a pavement marking will work there, then we'll follow up with traffic engineering and try to get a center line in. The pavement markings are cheap compared to the safety they provide, especially in the rain and at night. So if that's something that we can do, that 500 is a recommendation.
It's not set in stone.
The only last one I have, we had talked before, I received a phone call from a citizen regarding on Route 15 between 644 and 644,
right,
which is Camp
correct.
Friendship Road, about speed
limit.
Yeah, speed limit there.
Mm-hmm.
So any update on that? Or?
No.
Okay.
No, sir. No, not yet. That was on our... That was one of the things that was on my...
Oh, the little loop.
It was on my
list.
Yeah,
she was saying, because I...
The speed limit changes.
Halfway through, it changes to 45.
It does. So yeah. We'd look at if... Yeah. Just do a speed study and push it all the way through, if that makes it such a small section. Yeah. I don't...
And then we got the speed study on the consent agenda. That's to do a speed study right up around Starlight Business Park. You know, we're
just extending 45.
Yeah, extending 45 from where it is, but maybe just past Little Creek Road. So that's what that is. That's all that I have. But VDOT's doing fantastic.
Thank you.
We send service calls out. You know, I know they're going to be going out and cutting the... cutting some branches by the post office. The branches were already cut, but someone must have done that.
Here's where the road for you, 629, where they put the bridge. Now, they may have cut that. I've not driven the bus down lately, but I was driving the bus down while the bridge was still being replaced. And if I met somebody, I was going to be cutting those limbs for them. That might be one about cutting them back.
Okay.
6.0.
Right.
Deep Creek, yeah. From Jordan Store, at least down to the replaced bridge. Now, that was earlier this fall, and I forgot to say anything. Of course, we had a bridge out, so it wasn't like a toll lot. That was getting a little bit on the narrow side.
Thank you very much for sharing those concerns. We always appreciate it.
Any questions you
have?
I know. On 620, coming from Woodridge, all of that's asphalt paved. As soon as you hit Blue Vanity, you know probably what I'm going to tell you. Evidently, they just put tar down, and then they throw gravel on top of the tar, and that's just rough, rough, rough. Is that normal? I know some years ago, that they had done something like that. And I was following an UPS truck and I broke my windshield. And just recently a woman told me that she got her windshield broken. And it looks like a lot of that isn't tacked down very good because it's real rough, just like a scrub board, basically. Why is it that Alamar County gets a good road and we get that?
It's not fair, is it? It's not fair.
No, it's not fair.
It is not fair.
It's like when you look at our update.
You know the reason for that? Why they put a road in like that?
We do. We use, first, if you do have a circumstance where you have aggregate that's chipped your windshield, our contractor who installs those roads are ultimately responsible for rolling and compacting the surface to such a degree that it's not supposed to loosen and throw aggregate. So in that case, that's a tort claim that's viable, and you can submit that to VDOT and we'll forward it to the contractor. Or any of your constituents, if they have a broken windshield or a chip that they get from that. The second, it costs us about 10% of hot mix asphalt to chip seal. So we extend our resurfacing dollars over the county.
I would suspect that, yes.
And the cost benefit to seal the pavement, provide a friction surface, and then extend the life of that pavement, that's the reason that we chip seal. And we just get so much more money per mile by doing it that way. So much more asphalt per mile.
So you manage the chip seal.
Right. But we also can chip seal. Now, we on the primaries, you'll see three different surface techniques. We'll either use a type of asphalt emulsion, a slurry, or we'll use a hot mix asphalt, or we'll use a thin lift, a combination of the two. So on the primaries, like Route 6, the pavements you'll see, we'll use a very expensive hot mix asphalt, full depth mill and fill to provide heavy truck traffic. But for the secondaries, we use chip seal, or we even attempted, we tested a fog seal technique on Route 640 down in the southwestern part of the county, because that's also a mix between the two. But we get so much more resurfacing mile per dollar with that technique to extend the life of the pavement. And ultimately, as traffic rides and the surface consolidates, it will be just like most of the other pavements in the county. It'll take it some time. Or we'll come through if it snows and we'll plow some of it off.
A long time. And also, the last time we talked about trimming along the roads, and within the last 2 weeks they have. But what they've done on 620, there's limbs and all hanging over the road. They cut underneath all of that, but these are still hanging over the road. They didn't get them up here. They were high. Mm. So those are still there. I wonder why they wouldn't. Do they not have machinery that can reach that? At one time they came through several years ago and they got all those, but they didn't get them this year. It's up towards that Antioch.
I'll go back and see. We do have a limb rack that we mount to the back of a tandem dump truck. And so we have a certain height that we go, but if the limb extends back to private property, or if it's an ornamental tree, or if it's an oak tree and they're concerned about an arborist perspective, they may skip it, or they think it's not low enough. Well, so they have a varied reason. But if there's one there that you're hitting, we'll go back and clip it.
Yeah, there's only a feel there. And also, could you...
So that was 620.
620. It's actually in the area of 4978 Rolling Road.
Great. All right. I was just over there yesterday. Yes, sir.
And also, can you explain rural rustic, what the definition of that is?
Rural rustic is a design criterion. When we design a project, if it has state funding or federal funding, and based on its functional classification, whether it's a local collector, whether it's an arterial route, it's a Federal Highway Administration classification, based on the funding type and the roadway's functional classification, that dictates the design criteria for which we would need to repair and improve that road. Say, for example, a Route 6 bridges are a good example of that, or the shoulders on 1553 roundabout right here. We used federal aid for that project, so when we improved that project, we had to improve it to federal standards. And AASHTO, the American Association of State Highway Transportation Officials, design criteria. For a rural rustic route, those requirements are relieved to within the 30-foot prescriptive right-of-way that the department holds. We can make minimal improvements. We widen the pavement to 18 feet. We grade to drain. We replace culverts at the entrances if necessary and cross pipes, and improve the signage, reduce the speed limit to 35 miles an hour. So the design criterion for a rural rustic route, once it's designated as such, means that the county is not going to propose any additional development along the route, that it's going to remain rural. then we have a waiver of those elevated design criterion to use lesser requirements, and those are the rural rustic road design criterion requirements. Would so that's not, really the designation of it.
Would there not be homes around that area on that?
There could be.
Mm-hmm.
There could be homes along that route, and it can be developed to that standard. What we would look at is something like a commercial develop that would have a lot of heavy truck traffic, a lot of sustained heavy truck traffic. Then a rural rustic route, typical section, 18 feet, low shoulders, light culverts, mm-hmm. is not a design solution for that. We would need to go to a more established, a higher level standard of care with design criteria, geometric section that's wider, full shoulders, maybe paved, larger aprons at the entrances, those types of things.
Okay.
Did I answer your question?
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
And the two get confused. The rural rustic routes get confused with rural additions, which is the
yes.
Code of Virginia program to mm-hmm. improve a private street to secondary street acceptance requirements and then brought into the secondary system.
Mm-hmm.
We get a lot of questions about rural addition versus rural rustic. And rural addition is proven a private street with some other funding and then bringing it to the system, like Blue Mountain.
Right. Yeah. Okay. I did want to know those differences. Thank you.
All right. Any other things for Mr. Thomas? And did y'all start the smart scale right
now for? We are about to. So I'll briefly go through this, and if anything, Mr. Robinson's not here, but he is on top of it, and we will coordinate with him. If you have any questions about this presentation, I do want to go through very briefly. Smart scale is our primary revenue stream for project funding. We used to have a revenue stream that was HSIP, Federal Aid, Highway Safety Improvement Program. Now those types of funds are being used for other what we call systemic safety improvements. But our primary revenue stream for project improvements is Smart Scale and V-Trans. It has to meet a V-Trans need. So we've had three rounds of Smart Scale so far, and thankfully a lot of the project priorities that we've had within the county have been improved. 1553, 53618, all of these are projects that receive Smart Scale funding. In the last round of Smart Scale, round three, the Culpeper District submitted 44 applications for funding for improvements across the entire district, nine counties. Of those 44 applications, four projects were funded with about $20 million. So we are looking in round four, looking back over our shoulders at round one, round two, round three, what projects scored well and which ones didn't, and try to refine what we apply for in round four. So we will be working with Brad to prepare a list of recommendations. Right now we've got a tight timeline. One of the changes for round four was the schedule. So the schedule, the county will submit applications through the end of March, beginning of April, for funding. They will be vetted between April and May. We will return the applications to refine, and then they will be due at the beginning of August. And this is for funding that the CTB will award in 2021. But we keep moving this date further back, further back, further back, further back. So we are going to follow up with Brad and work through the recommendation of the applications and get everything pre-submitted by the end of March.
Well, and if you remember too, we had a lot of areas that we were looking at, a lot of roads that we were looking at last year that we submitted that we didn't get funding for.
Right.
So those may still be a high priority for the board, so it may not be a whole lot of going back to the drawing board to figure out what it is.
Right. The county in the county in Smart Scale Round 3 could submit four applications, and we are doing that again. Four applications are the limit. But what we're recommending this time are only two projects that meet the safety threshold that we feel would be eligible for funding. So instead of submitting the four, we're not recommending four applications this time. We've got two projects that we're recommending, and we'll discuss and vet any of the other projects that you would like to consider. But one project is Turkey Sack and 53. That's in an urban development area. It's established UDA, so it meets criteria outside of safety, and it will allow us to submit that project. even though it really doesn't meet a safety threshold, it's a UDA project, so we can submit it. And the other project is up at, what was, I just flashed over that, 600 and 618. We could improve the scope of 600 and 618. It would increase the cost to elevate it and make that bigger, but we could apply for smart scale funding to cover the delta. If we didn't get funded, we would revert back to the scope of the project that we're advancing now and keep that moving forward. So that was option two. And if you, again, we are going to follow up with Brad. In this presentation are the projects that we've applied for, the ones that were funded, the ones that were not. And you can see in the smart scale score, the projects that were funded have a very high smart scale score, 15, 16. And the rounds that we just applied for, how low? 2, 1, 2. So that funding threshold, if we as a district have submitted 44 applications and only 4 projects were funded across the entire district, when you look at this table, it's telling that we can resubmit these projects that we selected, but there's a very low probability that they'll be selected for funding. And we as a district spent about $600,000 preparing the applications for round 3. And so this time we're trying to really look at and target high priority projects that we think have a good chance of being funded. But similar to round 3, even though the timelines have accelerated, we're going to work with Brad. And ultimately, Brad will submit the applications for us, but we'll work with him and support you. We need to back that end of March timeline back for any public notices that you need to provide for the projects that we've selected, so that when we get to that deadline, we'll be ready to go. And that is the gist of the presentation that we had for you tonight. We could have gone into a lot of detail about PSI and TNS and all these things, but if you have any questions about this, please contact us or follow up with Brad. And that's all that we had to present tonight for the Smart Scale update.
Any questions?
Thank you. Great, okay, thank you.
Oh, I'll add, I went by and saw the thing on 605 I was talking to you about.
Yes, sir.
They were doing a drainage resolution. So they put pipes all the way down the road. I was like, the ditch was like deep.
And
like,
now they filled, yeah.
Yeah, they put a pipe in and leveled it back off. It
looks good.
Yes, very much so. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Okay, Children's Services Act semi-annual report, Mr. Mullen.
Good evening. So I'm here, as you may well, to do my report that I like to do just every 6 months, just to give you keep up to date on the state of the Children's Services Act here in our county, which I'll be referring to for the remainder of the presentation as the CSA. So the first thing I just want to talk about first is our is the previous fiscal year. As you know, we purchased services through an annual budget that is part of the county's budget on each year. Every year, I typically have to come to the board to request additional funding because inevitably we end up estimating a bit low each year. So last year, I approached the board in June to request an additional $100,000 to have a total spending authority of $2,950,000. However, this year, I never even had to touch it. In fact, this year was the first year that I have been able to recall where the CSA actually came under budget. Our final amount was actually spent was just a hair under $2.4 million. So we actually went by approximately $457,000. The better news is actually a year-to-year comparison. The previous year, we actually spent approximately $2.9 million in services compared to what we spent this past year. We actually spent about approximately $500,000 less, about an 18% decrease. This is in part primarily due to the efforts of the all the stakeholders that comprise the CSA. There was an increased focus on keeping children out of residential care. There was a intense focus on trying to keep children in our schools rather than having to go to private day placements, as well as looking at the community-based services that we were funding and seeing just how effective a lot of them were, because if we're going to be paying for this money, we want to make sure that we're getting work from the providers that we work with on a day-to-day basis. So this was, so in the past 2 years, even though I've only been in this position for 2 years, I'd like to think that the efforts that our team is making has been bearing fruit already. Now, keep this in mind when I talk about a couple of things a little bit later, because I'm going to talk about just a little bit some of the challenges we're already facing this current year. But just to give you a quick comparison of the difference that we see here, if you take a look at our spending expenditures since fiscal year 07, you'll notice, as always, in the past 4 years, we had a significant rise in spending for the services that we purchase. In the past 2 years, it's been a nice steady downward trend to a point where we're almost back to where we were prior to fiscal year 2016. This is all very promising, and the monthly spending that we've had in the past 60 months clearly shows this also. One big item of note, if you'll take a look, in June of 2018, we spent approximately $814,700 in that month, and that's because at the end of the year, a lot of vendors like to submit invoices for services that they may have neglected to charge us for. They definitely provided the services, but as you all know, not all vendors are most provide invoices in a timely fashion. So that always we always have to prepare for that. This past year, though, we were able to be a little more on top of vendors that had not submitted invoices in a timely fashion. So we were able to address that a bit more. This allows us to be able to provide more accurate projections for when near the end of the fiscal year, so that any money we do need to request is actually more accurately reflects our needs rather than hoping for a worst case scenario. So at this point, I want to talk a little bit about what we're expecting in the next few months or the remainder of this fiscal year. And as always, our biggest costs tend to be residential placements and educational placements for when children have to go outside our county to actually receive receive free appropriate public education. So when you combine those two, it counts for about 2/3 of our projected costs, and it ends up being approximately almost half of our clients that use these, whether it is going to private day school or whether they have to go to a residential program, which incurs not only residential costs, but also additional educational costs for while they're at the residential placement. So a lot of times that tends to be a hidden cost that doesn't get reported. And so I've been trying to bring that to the forefront so we have a more honest and accurate assessment of these types of services. The big item to note is the difference between the previous fiscal year and what we're projecting for our current fiscal year. One thing you will notice is that our private day census has gone up about two people or so, which doesn't sound like a lot until you consider that in fiscal year 19, a lot of our clients were ones that started approximately in the last half of that fiscal year. So the costs for those students were not quite as high as what we have this fiscal year, because those ones that we started in the last fiscal year, all but two of them have carried over into this current fiscal year and are projected to actually be in their placement for the entire fiscal year. So that actually, while you saved a little bit in the previous year, all it's doing is just moving the costs over to this current fiscal year. Is one big notice. The other big one is that we've had a huge increase in the number of residential placements that, or the residential programs we've had to place children in. In the last 2 months of 2019, we saw a dramatic spike of children that had to be placed outside the home for residential treatment. And this is, and when I've talked with a lot of my colleagues on a statewide basis, we're not the only locality to have experienced this. We have actually has been a very odd phenomenon that none of us can really pinpoint a source for. So, but again, some of those placements carried over to this current fiscal year, which now we're currently having to pay the majority of those costs in this fiscal year. So, again, it's a bit asymmetrical. The biggest takeaway, though, if you'll notice right here, is the change in our costs in educational placements. This fiscal year, we budgeted for $900,000 for educational placements. This is based on the current placements that were present at the end of fiscal 19 that we knew were going to carry over, as well as an estimated predicted number of new placements that would have to start this year. Every year, we always get new placements, inevitably. In the past, it's been the majority of them have been families that have moved into our county, able to bring their skills, their talents. They also bring, a lot of times, their children. And some of them do have unique needs above and beyond what we can accommodate for in the school. So if they have an educational placement, we are required to continue funding that placement. This year, however, in the first few months, we saw a significant increase in the number of placements that were requested by the schools. As a result, we are currently over almost $295,000 above budget on that line, with an additional $31,000 pending approval this month through our community planning and management team.
Or just for the board room, and that's just that one particular line, not the budget as a whole.
That is correct. What this means is that if spending is flat on all other services, for residential, for foster care, for community-based services, we should be able to absorb the shock. However, we're already seeing, as I already mentioned, we've already seen an increase in residential placements this year. And the placements that we are funding have a higher cost attached to them than placements from the previous year. A lot of this is because the placements that are needed for these children are not as do not receive the level of Medicaid funding that they have in the past. Some of our children that we're coming through are coming more with more intense and higher needs that we really need to address. And of course, the higher the need, the more intense the service, which unfortunately costs a little bit more than a bit more for our child. One item of interest, though, in the placements that we've had is the reasons or the source for these placements. In the past, the majority of the children that we've placed have had to be done because of behavioral issues that have stemmed from developmental disabilities that the child, I can't think of a better word. These are children that have had been diagnosed with intellectual disabilities, with autism spectrum disorder, with other specific disabilities because their neurological system didn't develop in a normal, healthy fashion. And these are children that we typically expect to be in a placement for the majority of their educational career because their cognitive deficits that they have aren't really ones that you can really make up or compensate for. However, in the past 12 months, the majority of what we've been seeing have been behavioral issues, but they have been from other milder educational disabilities. So I've already been in contact with Flannery County Public Schools and have been starting to investigate this change with their Director of Special Education, Jennifer Valentine. We are looking at several factors. One is we're looking at what the schools are doing to accommodate current children that currently have individual education plans or IEPs. We're also assessing the mental health infrastructure that our schools have. As you know, this is becoming a growing issue, not only in our county, but statewide and to a certain point nationwide. And the concern we want to make sure of is that these additional placements that we're having are not a byproduct of a lack of qualified counselors and professionals in our schools to be able to address the needs of these children in a way that prevents these from becoming issues that sort of escalate and balloon to a point where now they have to go outside the county to be able to be adequately managed. So those were the big ones. When I come back in a few months, I'll talk a little bit more about some of the legislation that's going through right now that's going to have a major impact on how on how our program runs and the shape of services provided through several agencies. That being said, does the board have any questions?
No, sir.
Okay.
Anybody?
Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Next is L, the burn building update, Ms. Tolbert.
So you can look at it because it's kind of condensed on the slideshow.
It won't scare us, will it?
Yeah. All right, so we have some updated information on the burn building, and I'm going to need some direction. So again, the final designs have been completed. This is the rendering by CRA. Next step for the grant would be to go to fire programs and get approval. We have already asked fire programs for an extension on the grant, so we have more time. We don't have an answer to that yet. Someone actually has to go to a board meeting and explain to them why we need the extension. We don't anticipate that being an issue, so we think we will get an extension and that shouldn't be a problem. So the estimates we received in October, as you remember, $954,000. That did not include actual estimates for the site work. After discussions with the committee, they decided to forego that concrete roof and go with just the wood framed with the asphalt shingles to bring the cost down. Committee had long discussions about other ways to cut costs further. However, most of them just felt that changes to this basic design would impact the training efficiency. So they really didn't want to look at cutting back too much further if they didn't absolutely have to. So the quote we have, or estimate we have now, is based on a stick-built building, not a prefab building. As of now, our cost estimates are $830,000. This cost estimate does include the site prep, and that was quoted to us as estimates from Draper Aiden. They did the site work, so they gave us what they believe the site work, or they gave us the site plan, so they gave us what they believe the site work would cost. That was $127,000 more than CRA had originally estimated for the work, so that brought the costs up tremendously.
So they're able to bring the cost down because going from concrete to the wood roof, but right, then the actual site costs kind of
were much more than we had anticipated. CRA and Josh Bauer from CRA is here to answer any questions and talk to you guys, as well as several members of the committee and the project manager for the county. Their biggest recommendation is to go ahead and go out to bid for the design with an option to allow contractors to give us a prefabricated building. We'd require that the prefabricated building had the same basic specifications as the stick-built one that he has designed. And since the design is so similar to the state's prototype, we think there'll be many options out there for prefabricated that would match it. And that would possibly lower the price. We wouldn't know that unless we put out an IFB, unless we put the solicitation out and have people give us quotes. So the direction we're looking for is, one, either move forward with fire programs, ask for the extension, get the approvals, and go out to IFB. Once we have those prices, you know, we would come back to this point and decide what to do from there. Or reject the grant, don't move forward. The county would be responsible for the $44,860 we've already spent on A&E, but we wouldn't need to move further anymore.
But one thing, so obviously if we go to IFB, there's some costs involved with
I mean, there are some costs with an IFB. We're not required to do advertising of any sort, so that cost is negated. The cost basically would be my time. Not much of an issue as far as I'm concerned. I'm happy to do it. I'm happy to put it out there and see what we get back. I think it would be a good option just to see. There's no guarantee we would bring the price down from that any. It's also a possibility we could bring it down a lot. We just don't know until it gets on the street.
What's the charge over the grant now? How much money over the grant?
So it's $830,000 and then the grant's $450,000, right?
Right. We get $450,000 for construction from the grant. And then the additional $30,000 was the A&E. If we move forward with the grant, we've basically already spent that. So it's $450,000 and $830,000 for the estimate on the building.
So you basically say $44,000 plus the $830,000. So right. We're at basically $875,000.
Right.
Let's get some bids.
$835,000 is the cost.
$830,000 is the cost. Is the cost
estimated cost.
To build it. And
that's important. That is only an estimate.
Plus, we've already paid $45,000 roughly for design and all the engineering and architectural costs. So that would be a total, if the estimates come in as is, $875,000 total, but we only get $450,000 total, right?
$450,000 for construction, $34,000 A&E, yeah, right. So $480,000, yeah.
$395,000,
yeah.
That's what we'd be looking at, if it's exactly what
that
comes out.
Right.
And, is this grant guaranteed?
Yeah, the grant is guaranteed, assuming they do give us the extension, because our deadline is this month.
Okay.
So, yes, I mean, we are approved for that grant up to the $480,000.
Mm-hmm. Where's the money coming from on this one?
It's going to come, it would come from unassigned fund balance.
You blow up your hands?
No, that's, I mean,
unassigned fund balance is the only place it can come from.
Mm-hmm.
We're getting mighty low on that, aren't we?
We are. We've talked about that.
It never quits. And
I'm not sure we can afford it.
You know, I don't see how we can continue all this. The fire equipment and all those are 100% necessary, even though they are so high. But this is something that has been taken care of for years and years. I know they've been inconvenienced and all, but I just don't see where you can afford it. I question it from the first time I saw it, because I figured you're going to be running up a lot more money, and we cannot continue that. So,
well, you said that the only thing that costs us is your time.
Yeah.
And we're already paying you.
Yeah. But it's still
No. I mean, if the board wants to see what the final cost comes in at, final estimates, then they can decide
what the final cost would be. We might be surprised.
How much does that
be? Is that going to be a different building? The final.
Well, no, they've
already figured that.
No, what we'll do is we'll put out an IFB asking for somebody to build this building, or as an alternate, give us an option to build us a prefabricated building that have these specs. So we will get pricing and estimates on all of them. Do you have any type of estimate on how much we can save with a prefab over?
What's interesting is we're getting a handful of different numbers. So we've got numbers from the prefabricated companies that are saying they can do it for $600,000 to $700,000. But what this includes some site costs, we have utility costs, there's other factors to it. So the reason we're doing this is the option is A is a general contractor can stick build this, you know, or buy the kit of parts to be able to put it together, or it can be prefabricated. The idea is that we want to make sure that it meets the grant. You know, is that it's got the general intent of what your firefighter is looking for, and meets the intent of the grant. Because the last thing we want to do is go through this and then we don't follow after the grant. So right at this point, you know, it's time is the issue. So it's going to be Cindy's time, so it's my time to be able to put the proposal together. We'll be able to compare them apples to apples and come back to you and say, here's what we believe the costs are. One thing that's also important is that we are reaching out to local companies and vendors to see if there's materials that we can, that would be either donated in kind. Some of the big things are like the road drive coming in from the street. If we can get somebody to come in and do the excavation, you know, or a company to come in and provide the stone for us. You know, we have been diligently engaging companies to see if there's things that we can do to reduce the cost of the project. So we'll, when we come back to you, we'll come back with all those pieces and you know, and a recommendation on how we could proceed, whether it's, you know, within the budget or options therefore.
And we also got Ben Powell, the project manager for the Bird Building, too, if you want to ask him any questions or if you mm-hmm. that or any of the fire rescue folks.
Mr. Weaver, did you have any questions?
No, I just...
Yeah, I just think that whenever this is put before us, we always should have a rationale. We should have the reason. Why is it important? What is it going to do for us? How is it... So that we have that in our mind and not just looking at what it's going to cost. What is it? What are we wanting anyway? What did our fire and rescue people say to us? Well, how is that going to benefit us, our safety, our people, our training? Is that important? If it's not important, then we are just don't spend the money.
Well, fire buildings, I was the project manager for Charlottesville Albemarle's training center back in the late 80s. And when we built that, the fire building and these gentlemen that have come up with what they're trying to have the building present to them in training scenarios covers everything from firefighter one and firefighter two basic operations just to train the people to get out on the fire grounds and do the work. Then it builds on continuing education hours versus using their air packs that you're getting ready to buy, ground ladder exercises, using the aerial ladders, utilizing fire stream, fire hose movements in the building, rescue operations. It also helps train new operators on the apparatus because they're going to be pumping the hoses that the people are using inside the building. This building has multiple uses. Mr. Lai, they have repelling abilities off the outside of the building so they can practice rescue techniques. So it's a multiple bunch of uses that this building will provide. And it's training that they have to have. And the only way they're getting it now in a lot of the hands-on training is going outside the county and spending time. And when you have the volunteers who are already trying to get their hours, utilizing their hours in the county to run the calls, then they have to take more hours away from their family and other free time to run outside the county to do this training. Whereas they can do it in county and at least save some time on things.
Thank you. Okay. And if that's important to us, then we want to get the best price. And I don't think we need to That's what I'm sorry.
Don't quibble about money. Can I quote you?
Just write a check.
Yeah. Pull out your checkbook.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Powell.
Thank you.
I think we should definitely at least get the bids and look at them and see if we can't get some in-kind donations and possibly get some of the site work done. You said that was $127,000.
That was $127,000 over what they had originally estimated.
So it was like $200,000, $250,000.
I mean, if we get that and get back down there and talk the numbers.
So anyway, is that majority direction from the board to just move forward to the IFB?
Okay. All right. I will be back when that's done.
Before I go
Thank
any
you.
Further, can we get a motion to extend? We're not going to finish in 3.5 minutes.
Nope.
What time is it?
7:56, ma'am.
Oh, I can't see. Well, we have to go to what?
10.
Closed session.
We got to go to closed session.
Okay, I'm
going to
extend
10 p.m. Why don't you just say 11 and then we'll cover it.
Second.
Yeah. Second.
All right, we got a motion made by Ms. Cooper, seconded by first by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. And opposed, and the chair votes aye. We're now extended. All right. Next is the Water Tower logo presentation, Mr. Dahl.
Okay. So we got lots of Water Tower logos. From our last meeting, we even extended it another week.
Yeah. Yes. Gentlemen, thank y'all for all y'all's work on this. Appreciate it.
So we did the crowdfunding. We got some logos from the schools, and then we've got some kind of internal logos that we've kind of gone with too that we've been showing the board already. So let me kind of give you just a little background, and this is not necessarily we're saying to go with this. We're trying to give the board some ideas of cost, of what the logo is going to cost. So, for instance, on this one right here, something simple like this, and you can't really see it on the screen. You'll probably see it better on the TV. But anyway, to have a two-color logo like this with letters or something kind of simple like this, the cost for the logo on one side of the tank would be $11,000. On two sides of the tank would be $19,000. So remember, we were always telling you it was going to be about $15,000 to $30,000 per side. So this is obviously well within the below the $15,000 to $30,000 per side. Again, another one, just kind of a basic one, depending upon what you wanted, and you know, depending upon if what was in this area, if that was the tank color, which might get drawn out. Or if it was white, it would probably be a little bit more than the $11,000. But again, something like this, we're probably talking for what they quoted on this, it would be about $11,000. But if you remember, the tank is Horizon Blue, so if you had Horizon Blue in that area, it would probably get washed out quite a bit. So I'm thinking you'd want to do white, and it would be more. So that's just an example of cost.
I like a lot of that.
Yeah. Going back to this one. They quoted this one would be about $16,500 to do this one. So again, about $5,000 more than the other ones. This one's a little more complex. This one, they said, would have approximately 8 colors. And one thing that we would have to do is we'd have to kind of get rid of some of this gradation a little bit, which we can do. Like if you see in this tree, it's got a little gradation of color. We could make that a little more solid or make some lines or things like that. So even something that's a little more complex is still kind of within the range that we talked about of the $15,000 to $30,000. This one would be $16,500 or $29,000 for two sides. And like I said, we might have to work with them to do a little bit on the gradation of colors and the transition of colors.
But on something like that too, when you get at a distance,
yep,
those things are going to fade out. Look at that little canoe. I can see it fine. I can see the bicycle. But if you're moving along in a car, and how far away is it going to be from the road to here? I keep forgetting.
It's pretty
close, 50 feet.
Well, it's, I mean, from the railroad,
from the road,
50
from
feet,
the road
if
to,
you're
the
at,
tank,
to the tank.
But if, 50 to 100, less, between 50 and 100.
When you're at 100. When you're at the intersection of 250 and 15, if you look up at the tank, so
100 yards.
Well, how high is the tank?
It's not built yet.
But how high is it?
Yeah, it's probably about
120.
Probably, yeah, 125 feet, maybe, I think, maybe,
I don't
or more.
Think it's that tall as the radio tower.
No, I don't think so. But, I mean, so you remember the logo would be about 16 feet in height by 50 feet wide. So that's.
Yeah, that one I just think is too much.
So let's go to so obviously whatever we do, the actual logo would need to be confirmed. The pricing on those other ones, that was just a kind of quote on those. You know, obviously it would depend upon paint crew mobilization if they're able to paint all at the same time. But even if they had to remobilize, we're not talking a big swing in price. But anyway, there would be a little shift in cost.
I don't see how we can put a logo and not have a flying flugel.
Well,
so these, so going through a crowdsourcing, so we got, I don't know, Kelly, what do we get, about 30? Yeah.
I thought the last time we talked about this, that the board was somewhat interested in open for business.
Was the board interested for open for business?
We talked about it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I thought Tony lost it.
I mean, I don't have any complaints about that.
So where did these?
You know,
come?
I mean, what are we selling?
Well, let's take a look at what we got right now. They can, yeah. We have another week, right? So you can revise.
We could. I mean, we're pushing. So anyway, so here's so through the crowdfunding site called Hatchwise, we got these logos right here, and then the board has it in the package. So. I'll just kind of scroll through them to see if anything sticks out to the board.
Did these? Who did these?
I don't know.
Okay. You put out a bid, you say, you know, I'll give you $100 if I select your bid.
Oh, is that right?
You give them criteria that says, look, we're trying to do a logo for this, and this is the colors, or these are the dimensions, and this is what it's going on. And, you know, they probably go and do a little research looking at the Fluvanna County site to see if they can pull in any ideas from the site to go with it. You know, some of these for the crowdfunding one, they're a little corporate, some of them, so... there's some.
Kind of like the one in water. 17. It's kind of like the one.
A lot of them to me don't really say a whole lot about Fluvanna County.
No.
You're not going to be able to say too much up there.
And so we got 33 from through the crowdfunding. Some of the county submissions, you got the color one, you have that one, and then, or just basic Fluvanna County and established in Virginia.
And that, wasn't that the one we were talking about, you just put open for business under?
Something very similar to that.
36.
And then the schools, like I said, you already saw what the schools submitted, and nothing's changed. You know, we asked them if they wanted to resubmit anything in addition, and they just didn't have the time to do anything else. So it was just kind of the outline of the county and just the word welcome to Fluvanna.
Question still is, boy, is do they want to sell Fluvanna by putting a small logo there? Open for business. Keep on going down. Or up, which...
That's
the original one that you looked at. Keep on going.
34. Or 36.
You're right there.
36.
Very simple. Just put it under county.
This one's not terrible. Will we do it in person, or just do the county?
We could do, I mean, like I said, this right here was just pulled from the Fluvanna right here and just kind of made into just kind of a logo in itself. I mean, it's nice, and it says, you know, it's good for Fluvanna County, but it doesn't have a lot extra to it. But I mean, if you're
so
looking
Fluvanna,
for something simple.
So Fluvanna is part of the other Fluvanna. That circle is all together, is that
no,
right?
No, the circle, that's number 35, that's
okay.
All by itself.
Okay, I thought that was...
Yeah, it's quite. Just the Fluvanna County established 77 of Virginia. And,
You know, the only thing with the middle one, I mean, a lot of people use, you know, and this kind of gets into a whole branding thing too, you know, a lot of people use A Great Place to Live, Learn, Work, and Play, and you know, that's something we might want to look at, because that's not original to Fluvanna County necessarily.
No.
A lot of people have that.
The producer has something, they put Relax on theirs too. But we can add, it's a great place to live, learn, work, play, and do business.
Established 1777, and I think that needs to go on.
Right.
That's most
that's what we're all about. It's
yes.
A place to live.
I'd be fine with 36.
And the 19. You like Fluvanna.
It's bold and you can see it well.
I can see it no matter what. I mean, it's 50 feet, so.
Yeah.
You can see whatever one of these.
And if you wanted to put your open for business on the bottom of them.
You know, the one thing you just have to remember, I mean, this is going to be up there for
ever.
A long
years.
Time. So, I mean, you want to put something up there that can stand the test of time. And
the more colors you put up there, the more it's going to...
If I was going to do 36, I would take 36, I would remove the word county, and I just put Fluvanna open for business, and then establish 1776.
I can prove that
but
right there.
But that's not all they're about. I like open for business, but So we're not all about COVID, but it's a good place to live and learn and play and open.
But we're promoting business
and
also.
And
open for business.
And open for business.
That's right.
Great place to live, learn, work, and play, and we're open and open for business.
And you can't focus so much on it.
So if it makes any difference, I'll say a majority of the staff like number 34.
I like 34 too.
I like 34, but I think the more colors you put on it.
You're good.
Well, I mean, like I said, with this, I mean, you're going to be basically having different tones. You'd have different tones of greens. You'd have the blue. On this one, 34, what I would probably do, I would probably have the Fluvanna County that's down below in black up underneath it on this one.
Yeah, I think one thing,
navy.
I mean, like...
You could do navy.
I think the graphic is a good thing. I mean, words are fun, but honestly, if you ask me what's the logo on a particular tower around here...
All right, the one in Zionscroft has been up there for a while.
Yeah.
What is it?
It says
Louisa County Zions Crossroads Business Park or something like that.
Yeah, it's a business park there, right? So to some degree, they're already advertising a business park.
And that's what we're promoting.
Well, what I'm saying is, from the person who's driving by, they're not going to know that's Louisa versus Louisa.
That's right.
I think unless you drove by that tank like I do as many times, you have no idea what's on that tank.
Right.
But you won't put one out like never
captures, you know, your eye and you go, oh yeah, they got a cool tower and then you look at it a little bit more. So
what is the graphic saying about Fluvanna?
We got river. I think that's Mr. Spitzer riding his bike.
And we ride.
That's Mr. Spitzer riding his bike on Route 76, and that's people kayaking or canoeing down the Rivanna River, the James River.
You could take 34, take the great place to live. Skip the whole county word because who cares that it's a county, we all know that. And then put, great place to live, work. You have a great place to live, learn, work, play, and grow your business.
You could put
something underneath that. So if you did the great place to live on top of the sun, right? Or inside the sun, and then you did the learn, work, and play or something like that underneath it.
And I think the business should be on there because that's what we.
This original logo, the logo on top says, is it in the hallway?
Is it a Fluvanna?
It is. We have actually a sign of this in the Morris room right outside the wood. We'll find out.
Okay.
Let's see.
Dun, 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 dun.
Probably be quicker.
Yeah.
I think it's a Velcro on the wall. Yeah. Let's see here.
Flip a cup.
I thought I'd need to spend a fortune putting a whole lot of paper this
way. Right.
In the scope of the project, it's such a minor cost.
Kelly will probably have it back here for off the wall before I find it.
Whatever's causing this delay, I'm blaming it on Mr. Rothman.
Mr. Rothman is sick today.
Long as the stage is not sick.
Great place to live.
Learn,
work. How about great place to live?
Learn,
should
be.
Liz Byrne has started this.
See, there we go.
Business.
See, she has a quick.
Yeah, actually, she has.
She's going to wear cute shoes today. My toes are killing me. Sorry.
See, that's what it originally came from. Visit, explore, discover.
But where did that come from? Who painted that?
It was honestly when Jason Smith was here, we had someone create kind of like this logo for the county, kind of for like the county.
Bike trails.
Kind of like a little bit for tourism and stuff.
Yeah, I thought it was on the tourism website.
Yeah, maybe.
Is there any
concept? You just live, learn. I mean, a great place to, and then underneath there, the little county.
Do you have the rights to reproduce that in that manner?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, we do. So your thoughts on this one? Now, do you like this one or do you not like this one?
I like it.
That's fine. You don't like it, Mary?
I think it's too busy.
I think we're beating our heads against the wall for a very long time.
So, a simpler? Do you think a simpler one would be better?
I mean, I like the simple one, but I mean, this one's fine. I'm not what's to do, split hairs.
So you like that one?
You like 36?
I like 36.
Yeah, I do too.
I can live with 34.
So flip a coin.
Where would you put your words under 36?
I get rid of the word county and I just go open for business and just establish 1777 Virginia.
There you go.
That's it.
I'd vote for that.
How many more guys do you know of that picture of?
A few, yeah.
I've never seen.
I can show you.
There's a peach, peach in Georgia.
Georgia, oh yeah, down 95.
Yeah, everybody remembers those.
Yeah, but, you know, that's a little.
Nobody's
gonna
remember.
Too.
Okay, you know, great place to live, whatever. So, I mean, I do think there's something about a logo that captures people.
I love our rivers.
So here's, for instance, here are some. So this is the site that we. This is the paint company that's using. So if you're talking about who does pictures, these are just some examples of tanks of the year that won previously.
They are. They're pretty. They cover a lot of space.
Now I like that one right there, number 7.
Ohio.
7?
No, it's got the buck, the bass, and the turkey. Just saying.
How about number 8?
Number 11.
Yeah, I mean, a Chiefs fan.
Yeah, I mean, they capture you, right? I mean, color's good.
That 213 or looks to me like that would not be very effective.
I don't know, that red part right there catches my wife's attention. I think it's the one that has.
Watch out there.
I mean, so to go back to, yeah, I mean, there's some tanks that have a lot of graphics to them.
Yeah, they're painting up the whole tank.
Ooh, I like the red one.
What number?
The flower.
The rose. Oh, the one, the winner from 2006.
I still think my zipper ID is a good one.
No.
So anyway, I mean, here's just an example of...
Yeah, I was trying to think of that.
What else do we all have a favorite animal?
No. Well, you had that one submission that was a persimmon tree, right?
Persimmon.
We did. The only reason, so here's the pros and cons to the persimmon tree. I mean, so it's our logo. I mean, I'm sorry, it's our county seal. And do you want, when you think of our county seal, it's more of official business. I mean, do you want that to kind of be the brand of Fluvanna County? Or do you want something that's a little different?
34 and 36 are my two favorites. I mean, I got to admit, 36 is the one I looked at first. I mean, I could live with either one of them.
Then you can just skip the, just do 34 and just do Fluvanna over the business. We capture everything. We capture the rural nature and we capture the business.
Yeah, I could, if you open for business underneath the Fluvanna, I could do that one.
Is he?
It's fine with me.
By God.
No, I don't like.
Well, we got three
like
S's.
Open for business. That's not what we're all about.
Yeah, but the logo lets you know that you're working in Plain. Are you?
Okay, you need to say
that we're rural. That we have rivers. That we
just remember, if you put open for business, I mean, we're open for business for 15 years. So,
yeah, open for business.
Yeah, but we're taking steps to promote that.
Paying up once, you know, you should show us.
All right, I'd like to make a motion for number 34 with open for business.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, second by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
Object.
I haven't gotten there yet.
I don't know. I'll say no.
Okay. I think we
can. Y'all are killing me.
What are you doing?
I don't want to vote. Can you put, I want to see. Where's open for business on me?
Underneath the banner.
Just take out the county.
Just take out the county. Just go over the
business. Yeah. Take out the county.
That's not what we're all about.
Yeah, but the picture.
We'll put millions of dollars for business. Yeah. And it is what we're about now.
Mr. Chairman, there's
you a liked it the last time you said.
I haven't voted yet. I'm just sitting here listening.
Learning, working, and doing this. Oh. I want to be part of a complete thing. We want people here to live, to learn, to work.
But if we cover them up with too much stuff,
yeah, you can't get all that stuff.
Yes, you can.
It won't.
Look at the case. All the three or four little workers.
No, ma'am. It's going to be four little birds.
Well, there's two votes. Are you? What are you doing, Mike? There's
I'm sitting here in my head trying to picture.
Well, you said you like one of the two.
I like either one of them.
Well, then which
all
one?
All right, vote, Mr. Picker. I'm sitting here and listening to everybody else.
Well, I'm going to like number 36. I'm going to tell you that.
Yeah.
If I can make her
happy. No joke.
Like I said, it's the board's decision. If the board decides to go with open for business, that wouldn't be my first choice, but that's the board's decision. And I'm not sure what our economic development coordinator would think about that for businesses. Maybe businesses like that. Maybe they think it's catchy, but.
Yeah, this is a business park. This isn't a business park.
So you're basically, hang on, Ms. Booker.
I'm sorry.
You're basically saying you think open business would turn somebody off?
I don't know. I don't necessarily know that it necessarily shows Fluvanna County, and it's there for a long time.
Can you just allow other people to think?
Oh, don't worry. He's thinking. He don't have to listen to me.
No, but I do.
Yeah.
Well, you said you liked the two of
them. We can.
I like the
motion and do another one. It's not a problem.
No. Oh, man. Oh,
my. I'm trying to
get you. I think Mr. Dahl makes a valid point about the open for business underneath. Yes, ma'am, over and over and over again. So every time you talk, I'm just going to stand here and sit there and talk the whole time, too. I have been. I have been.
Well, how about if you replace it on the side?
All right, I'm going to vote no on just that.
Okay, so how about. How
about. Ms. Booker, on just the open for business underneath.
So how about we do, instead of a great place to just keep it simple and they take that sign that says explore, discover, learn, explore, discover, just replace that with learn, work, and play.
Because working is business.
Working is business.
How's that sound, Xavier? Mr. Lee?
What is it?
Just in the big sign there where it says, you know,
explore and discover.
Explore and discover there.
You're not talking about the circle.
No.
You're talking about 34.
No, right there, the poster on the side.
The poster board.
Oh.
You would just replace those words with work, learn, work, and play.
Right? That's fine.
And then you can get rid of the county and just have established.
Established in Virginia.
1777, Virginia, whatever. Established.
Savannah's going to be on that there at the county.
Or you can just put those words at the top and call it a day.
No, I'd like the established 1777.
Yeah, I do too.
I like that. That's why I liked the other one before.
Let me ask you something. What is a great place to live or work and play? What have we been using those words for?
To describe
that was Steve's catchphrase for the county.
Is it a logo? Is it a motto? What is it?
This right here, this was used, I mean, Steve used this to create bumper stickers.
Yeah, love, L-U-V.
I asked you, is that a logo? Is that something that we've used a lot and we've accepted?
No, it's not an official county logo, no. The county, and that's the thing, you know. I know Brian Rothamel, he's been... One thing he wants to talk to the board about at some time soon is what is the county's brand? What is our brand? What are we putting out there for? Because the county seal is not our brand. We need to have something that says this is the county. And obviously, whatever you're putting on the water tank, that's a big start. So if you have just Fluvanna County, that's a safe way to go through and say, you know, this is Fluvanna County, but something like 34, I think it's going to be more recognized.
I like the live, work, and play across the top because you got a little bit of everything. And you...
I can't
talk. No, ma'am, you can definitely talk.
All right, I'll make another motion.
No, wait. Can I discuss one more time? I've got one more thing.
Yes,
what
ma'am.
Is the, did we have a motto or something about Savannah?
Heart of Central Virginia.
And that was a motto.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
And then a great place to live, learn, work, and play was more to me as a brand. But we never officially assigned it as a brand.
Nope.
But I've always thought that.
That's kind of been kind of the tag, but I don't think it's ever been official by the board that says this is our thing. And
that's good on stationery, but not on a tank, I don't think.
Well, no, and the thing I'll say with this is, like I said, a lot of communities use that, and it's fine, it's great, but it's not necessarily original.
So are you saying that Brian wants to come up with a brand?
I'm saying that.
He said he had any ideas.
Yeah, but none of that's going to happen by the time.
No, it is not going to happen.
And we got to do this before then.
Yes, I mean, because
do it tonight. Decide on something tonight.
Yeah. I like the live, work, play. If you want to go live, learn, work, and play, put all four of them across the top. Because, I mean, the rural nature we live, we're proud of our schools because of the things that the school scores have done.
Yeah, I don't think you need to say live. I mean, we all have to live.
Right. So not, no business at all then, right?
Learn, well,
work,
and play.
Business is what you said.
Learn, work, and play.
Yeah, learn, work, and play. From that, 1777. Call it a day.
So this
I
one...
I like the Fluvanna established 1777. The rest of it, don't figure out.
Are you saying 34 with
34 that? Words across the top, and then we're in the word county, and just do established 1777.
Yeah. So would we say black words for where,
yes,
right here?
Navy.
Because your background is light blue.
Yeah,
I don't think
navy
the
or black
blue on it would be good.
And then we could, would you want the green as and the Virginia in those to be one of the greens that's
I'd
in there?
I'd keep the established 1777, the same colors blue down.
Okay, so make all that black.
One
then.
Color. Well, navy, black, don't matter. Whichever.
I think you take that. You get somebody to
change
it for you, and they can change the colors, and then we can mount it against a different. Well, we already picked the color that we're going to use, right?
For the tank, yes.
Yeah.
So they figure out what's the right color combination based on the tank color. That's it.
That'll make it pop.
How's that blue on that photo there?
That's
going
not
to
gonna
compare
look...
with the blue on the tank.
Well, they can change that. That's what I'm saying. They can make that.
They'd have to change it, I think.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
The blue on the tank's lighter, and I guess if you think about all the other color around it, it'll...
Heavier.
So you're going to put the three words or four words on top of that.
Learn, work, and play. Just three words.
All right. Close your eyes and look at that tank and put it up there.
There it is, right there. There it is, right there. No, I can stand there and hold it like Vanna White and pretend I'm a big tank.
Pretend you're a towel.
So there's an idea. I mean, that would obviously have to be squished down some. I mean, so that's the.
No, he has it up there. You can't put the words.
I can't.
Oh, man. And the county is much bigger than what established 1777 is going to be.
Yeah.
I mean, this is huge. So this is probably like 30 by 50 if I have to look at the dimensions of that.
Now, here's the major question. Do we want it on both sides or one side?
Just one side.
I think you just do one side
facing the stoplight. Yep.
Kind of facing at an angle.
Or be at an angle, yeah. Maybe.
Well, if you do that, and the people coming from Charlottesville never going to be.
They're not. The only other thing, if you do two sides, you almost have to do it facing 250 going towards Charlottesville and 250 going towards Richmond. But so then if you're coming off the interstate,
you don't
really see it.
Yeah, just put it on the side facing the light or facing the interstate.
Well, thank y'all for putting some words to describe our county rather than just...
Nobody can say we don't compromise.
So it's this... with Fluana County established in Virginia, and then the words up top like that sign.
You don't even have to put Virginia, just put established 1777.
They know
in Virginia because we're right in the middle.
Well, here's the only thing I'll say about that, then you're lopsided.
What?
Yeah.
If you don't have the Virginia on that side, then you're a little lopsided.
You're not going to do county. Just put established 1777.
Oh, get rid of county, okay. Yeah.
Put established 1777 right in the middle.
We'll do that. Okay.
By golly, do we have a motion for this
one? Now, when you showed us the tower with that on it, you couldn't see any letters in the previous one.
Back up there.
No, they have to redo that.
They're going to have to scale it. Once the board chooses kind of what they want, they're going to come up with a mock-up, and they're going to have to scale it.
And the one that he showed us had the picture all the way up to the top. So you'd never see that if you were at the bottom.
No, you wouldn't see it here.
That's a good point.
They'll center that.
Okay.
They'll center that.
Well, when they do that, can you send it out in an email?
I could, I can send it out as an email once they kind of mock it all up and they scale it. So, okay. So what's up there, Fluvanna, black
letters. I
don't
think they'll be able to see much on that picture now. From
the rally. Well, they might not be able to recognize the boat. They'll recognize the bike. You'll be able to see that.
Well,
and if it's up on the water,
I guess at the end of the day, if you want to get rid of the bike and the canoe, you can just have it.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, because those are things that we do here. We got the 76 bike trail.
Make it the love boat. Put the love boat on there.
You seen that?
Put a canoe on there.
There is.
Yeah,
there already is. That's right. All right. Are we satisfied?
Yes.
Ms. Eager?
I'm fine.
Mr. O'Brien, will you make a motion, please?
I made a motion that we do what's there with the words on top and stuff. So, the words being
work, learn, and play.
Doesn't matter what your order they're in. God, I'll shut up.
I don't think it matters what the word they're in.
Learn, work, play. Oh, yeah, okay.
Learn, work, play.
Do we have a second?
Second.
All those in
favor? Learn, work, play.
Aye.
Opposed?
One of the two.
Opposed. Chair votes aye. Motion passed 4-1. That's got to be the longest 30 minutes of my life. All right, here we go. Consent agenda. In the minutes of October 2nd, 2019, address meeting. O, minutes of October 16th, 2019, Ms. Lee. P, CRMF, FCHS, turf inspection and leveling, Mr. Dribbling. Q, CRMF, PW, 20-004-E-911. UPS battery replacement, Mr. Kreitzer. R, CRMF, PW, 20-006, Treasurer's Office concrete floor replacement, Mr. Kreitzer. S, Department of Health Agreement, Cindy Toller. I got to tell y'all, because his son Chris works with the school system. I'm like, is it for the school? And I just realized Dale's working. Yeah. S, Department of Health Agreement. Ms. Toller. T, A.G. Dillard Change Order Number 2, Ms. Toller. U, Resolution 17-2019-11-06- Holiday Lake 4-H Education Center, Mr. Dahl. B, Resolution 18-2019-1106, Route 15 Speed Study, Mr. Dahl. W, FY20 Love Works Grant Motion, Mr. Rothman. X, HVAC Specialist Salary, Ms. Rice. Y, Open Space Contract. Z, Open Space Contract, CTD Corporation, Mr. Sheridan. A, Open Space Contract, Ehrman, Mr. Sheridan. B, Open Space Contract, Henry, Mr. Sheridan. That was Grandpa. Grandpa. Man. C, Open Space Contract, Langevin, Mr. Sheridan. D, Open Space Contract, RD Virginia Timber 2, LLC, Mr. Sheridan. E, Open Space Contract, Profit, Mr. Sheridan. F, Open Space Contract, Ray, Mr. Sheridan. G, Open Space Contract, Schultz, Mr. Sheridan. And H, Open Space Contract, Stanley, Mr. Sheridan. Are we pulling anything off the consent agenda?
I'm not.
Okay, do I have a motion?
Okay.
I have a second. Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, second by Ms. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. We adopt the consent agenda. Unfinished business 10. There is none. 11. New business.
New business. We were going to give a resolution.
A resolution.
To Linda Steiger.
Support.
Uh-huh.
To the FLDP. Alumni, I was getting ready to say veterans group.
GIS mapping.
Mapping.
A letter of support to.
Do I have a second?
To support.
Motion made by Ms. Eager, seconded by Mr. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passed 5-0. Any other new business? Hearing none, I will now open the second round of public comment. Please keep your comments to 5 minutes on topic directed to the board. Is anyone who speaks to the board at this time? Step right to the witness chair. None. I will now close second round of public comment. Before we go to the closed meeting thing, I'd like to congratulate all those that went through the war yesterday. It's a long day, and the best part about 7 o'clock is it's over.
That's right.
All right, Mr. O'Brien.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to thank the board so much for closing the pursuit to the provisions above. Thank you. You've got 2 guys ready to go away for 1. Section 2.2-3711A5, Section 2.2-3711A6, Section 2.2-3711A7, and Section 2.2-3711A19, the purpose of the discussion of personnel, real estate, respective industry, investment fund, litigation, and other cases.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay. 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 We have a motion made by Mr. O'Brien, second by Ms. Eager. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. We are now in closed session.
More scrutiny.
Let's go. Chair, I move to close meeting, be adjourned to the County Board of Supervisors convening in an open session. Be resolved, the Board of Supervisors does hereby certify to the best of each member's knowledge, one, only public business matters lawfully exempted from open meeting requirements under Section 2.2-3711A of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended, and two, only such public business matters as were identified in the motion by which the closed meeting were convened were heard, discussed, or considered in the meeting.
Second.
Motion's been made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Booker. Ms. Eager?
Aye.
Mr. Weaver?
Aye.
Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. We are bowed back in open session. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
The motion made by Ms. Booker, seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. We are now adjourned.
All right.
Good night.